Survivors are unhappy. Fiona Goddard told LBC,
once an independent chair was assigned, then I would re-engage. But until then, I do not want to have any engagement in it.
Why is it some survivors are suggesting that it's a fix? In other news, as the NHS urges and suggests we should go back to wearing masks because of the flu pandemic, here's Conservative Party leader Kemi Badenoch.
I personally think that face coverings can be a barrier to social interaction, social cohesion. I do worry about a mask mandate. I don't think government should be mandating anything.
Plus, as Australia switches off social media to juniors or minors, we'll be asking, might that work here? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, European leaders have rejected Donald Trump's claim they are weak and overseeing a decaying continent. The president used an interview yesterday to warn immigration is destroying Europe, and he suggested the US could scale back its support for Ukraine. The Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davies, told LBC that Mr. Trump is no friend of Britain.
I've said for a long time he's an unreliable ally. What we've seen today and in the national security strategy they released yesterday is confirmation that we cannot trust him. The idea that another politician from another country is interfering directly into our politics is unacceptable. And the Prime Minister should say that publicly.
Sir Keir Starmer has called on European countries to agree tougher action to tackle illegal migration. Talks on reinterpreting the European Convention on Human Rights will begin in Strasbourg later. The Prime Minister, along with his Danish counterpart, has warned populists will win if they fail to take action. Ministers have announced £500 million to revive youth services as part of a 10-year plan for young people. They've warned a major change in direction is needed to tackle a crisis of isolation. The plan includes the refurbishment of 250 youth facilities. Paul Tucker, a youth worker in Birmingham, says long-term funding is needed.
Quite often, groups like ours really run hand-to-mouth in our communities. That means that we don't know how long we've got for a lot of our projects.
Under-16s in Australia are spending their first day without access to social media. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says the ban for under-16s shows enough is enough on online harms. Warnings for strong winds are in place as Scotland continues to feel the effects of Storm Bram. There could be gusts of up to 90 miles per hour in places today, with ongoing travel disruption expected. LBC's Alan Zizinski says one major route could remain shut for some time.
One of the country's major motorways, the M74, there has been a closure there now for the best part of 12 hours after, we're being told by police at the moment, multiple lorries were blown over. It sounds like a pretty horrific incident. It sounds like, by what we're hearing, at least five HGVs were blown over at roughly the same time on this really busy stretch of road.
In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.42 after closing down 3 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, most places seeing a brighter day but blustery with those outbreaks of heavy rain in Scotland. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Merry Christmas, my love.
Merry Christmas, Mum.
Merry Christmas, Nanny.
Happy New Year!
From the UK's first mobile phone call to the first text, we've been connecting you at Christmas since 1984 on Vodafone, the nation's network. The nation's network, Vodafone UK, supporting the nation since 1984. Learn more at vodafone.co.uk/TNN.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven on Wednesday, December the 10th. Coming up in this hour, as President Trump asserts that Europe is weak and decaying. I'll be asking, A, do you agree? B, if you do, why? What are the causes for that? The grooming gang inquiry gets underway. It will cost millions and take years, and before it is even, as it was announced, already survivors are saying that it's a fix and then they have absolutely no confidence in it. And when you hear some of their claims and complaints, actually, it does seem to make some sense. That's in more detail later in the show. Plus,
An LBC investigation can reveal that a former Metropolitan Police officer was accused of being involved in a London grooming gang. I'm Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
More pressure on those Eat Out to Help Out and other schemes during COVID. The suggestion we will never get back billions of pounds that the previous administration splurged. As the NHS urges and suggests we should all wear masks because of this flu sweeping the country, Kemi Badenoch says it's a very bad idea, but what do you think? And happy birthday one of the most recognisable pieces of music or theme tunes on television. It is, of course, the theme for Coronation Street, which celebrates 65 years today. But with the number of viewers dropping, is it time to, 65 years old, pension it off?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
My goodness, I've only just said the name of President Trump and already the responses are pouring, and a lot of you seem to agree with what he has been saying, because he has condemned European leaders as weak and criticised the decaying group of nations for being too politically correct and failing to control immigration. It was a 45-minute sit-down interview with Politico journalist Dasha Burns. He launched into that scathing attack, even including London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan. But he started off by arguing Europe's response to ending the war in Ukraine has been weak.
They're not doing a good job. Europe is not doing a good job in many ways. They're not doing a good job.
I want to ask
they
you
talk
about
too
that.
Much, and they're not producing. We're talking about Ukraine. They talk, but they don't produce. I think they're weak, but I also think that they want to be so politically correct that I think they don't know what to do.
He then condemned European leaders for their failure to curb immigration.
They're people I like. I get along with them. You know that. But they can't let this happen. And it gets to a point where you can't really correct it. There'll be a point, and it's very close to that
and
point.
And what will that mean?
It will mean that they're no longer going to be strong nations.
Does or that mean they won't be allies?
Or they'll be, well, it depends, you know, it depends. They'll change their ideology, obviously, because the people coming in have a totally different ideology. But it's going to make them much weaker.
So Europe in his sights, European leaders in his sights, as was London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan.
If you take a look at London, you have a mayor named Khan. He's a horrible mayor. He's an incompetent mayor, but he's a horrible, vicious, disgusting mayor. I think he's done a terrible job. London's a different place. I love London. I love London. And I hate to see it happen. You know, my roots are in Europe, as you know.
Right.
And I hate to see that happened. This is one of the great places in the world, and they're allowing people just to come in and unchecked, unvetted. He's a disaster. He's got a totally different ideology of what he's supposed to have. And he gets elected because so many people have come in and they vote for him now because, you know, it's like, it's one of those things. But I hate what's happened to London.
Well, I have to say, having spent much of yesterday stuck in traffic due to the appalling roadworks and lack of road space in this city, which is overseen by the mayor, while I wouldn't offer personal attacks, and I don't think that's appropriate, I think his stewardship of London, actually, that is probably a fair summation, but I would play the ball rather than the man. Response? Well, at the Downing Street press conference last night, Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper insisted Europe stands firm with Ukraine and also defended London Mayor Sir Sadiq Khan.
What I see in Europe is strength. And the strength and commitment to the support to Ukraine and also strength to step up to the plate and to ensure that we are increasing our investment in defence and also making sure that we are doing our bit through the coalition of the willing as well as through investment in the military support and the energy infrastructure support that Ukraine needs. And then obviously, when it comes to the Mayor of London, you would not be surprised to know I, of course, take a strongly different view, and I think the Mayor is doing an excellent job for the people of London.
Goodness me. No wonder she lives in Pontefract. To Kim, Lord Darroch, whose former UK ambassador to the US during the first Trump administration, also serves as a former UK national security advisor. Perhaps I can play first to you Yvette Cooper, our Foreign Secretary's words. She sees strength and commitment from European leaders. Would you concur? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Look, what Trump has said He's always believed this, Nick. He would say it privately, and it would leak out to us diplomats in Washington during his first term. The difference this time is he's ramped it up publicly, and it's been put in a US national security strategy, which makes it, you know, more serious and something which deserves greater attention. But a bit of this is about capturing the headlines. There's lots of bad economic news around in America at the moment, so he's changing it from that, trying to shift it from that. And as always with Trump, there is a kernel of truth in what he says, in that Europe has massively underinvested in defence for decades. Economic growth is weak in Europe, and governments, a lot of governments, are struggling. And I, by the way, personally concur with you about traffic in London. So there's a kernel of truth there. It's massively exaggerated. As you say, there is abuse, personal abuse, that is beneath an American president. But, you know, Europe is not as strong as it should be. Europe is still an economic powerhouse. I mean,
well, you say that, Lord Darrow, but I've looked at the growth figures, and the US currently 3.8%, European Union average 1.1%. So something's working better in the US than it is across Europe.
Absolutely right, and you can put all sorts of reasoning behind what's going wrong, including overregulation in Europe, including mistakes by governments, and so on. But it is still a reality that the European single market is the biggest in the world, and that Europe collectively is the world's biggest exporter. So, you know, some things are right. This is still a very wealthy part of the world.
Let me ask you this. You're schooled and skilled in the art of diplomacy. When journalists such as me and my listeners hear the president say, the European leaders, when it comes to Ukraine, they talk too much. They don't produce. It'll get to a point where they can't correct it. You know, it does resonate to a degree, Kim, but I know you know how all this works. Don't you think they talk too much and don't produce?
Well, up to a point, that's always been a problem, especially around the European Union table. But Donald Trump seems to make no distinction at all between Russia and Ukraine. He basically, you know, it's both of their faults, and he is clearly enormously frustrated that his peace negotiation efforts are not at the moment getting anywhere. On Ukraine, you can criticise Europe a lot about what goes on in the world, but Europe has supported Zelensky much more strongly than Washington has, and it has stepped up to offer and try to put together a security force should there be a ceasefire that needs some policing. Also, there's more aid that goes from Europe now to Ukraine than there is from the US. So, in that sense, Europe has done perhaps a bit better than some would have expected.
Kim, if I don't see you, happy Christmas to you and your family. Thank you. Lord Darrow, former UK ambassador to the US during the first Trump administration, served as a UK national security advisor, 12 after 7. Listening is David Pollock, who's an attorney and TV host, joining us from Orlando in Florida. Obviously, you'll know, David, his comments are front-page news here, as they would be in little old England or the UK. Is he tapping into a broad sentiment across much of the US, would you say? Morning to you.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. And look, it's the broad sentiments in the United States and in the UK. I mean, we're in a position where, for some reason, being populist and nationalist has become a dirty word. I think a lot of people in your country and mine alone, I mean, the reason why we voted for Trump is because we're being sick and tired of our national identity being overwhelmed by illegal immigration and far-left policies that didn't benefit the people who've made this country. And I think you're suffering a similar fate. It's not controversial. What we're talking about is having some sort of national identity. And for some reason, Trump has been very successful in the United States. And for some reason over there, it seems that a lot of people are frustrated, but yet the government isn't hearing their calls, right?
So I haven't been through your great nation for just over 12 months. I was there for the election. Is it less divided, more divided? Is he uniting the United States? What would you say, David?
Well, it depends on who you ask, right? If you ask Democrats, they'll say one thing. If you ask Republicans, you say another. But if you ask average Americans who are living in an economy that's benefiting them with unemployment going down, with inflation stabilizing, Americans are united. It's the politicians that divide us. And I was talking about this the other day in that column that I wrote. And the reality is Americans are desperate to really find the things that unite us. And we're sick of being divided by politicians. Trump is the first politician in a very long time, when he came down the escalator in 2016, that says, I'm not taking power from one party to the other. I'm giving it to you. And that's where we're at in the United States. And somehow the globalists turned the populist message into a dirty word. And it's not. Having national pride, having belief in your borders, having belief in your sovereignties, these aren't bad things. These are the things that made both our nations strong. And defending those things and believing in our traditions and our foundation, this isn't a bad thing. This is what makes the country the place where people want to come and immigrate to begin with. So I don't understand where the controversy comes. If immigrants want to come here, they should assimilate to the things that they've been wanting to come to.
Good punchy comments as ever. David Pollack, thank you. You're an attorney and TV host joining us from Orlando in Florida. And now over to you. Calls already coming in. If you agree with the president, and many of you do, and that's a simple one. Yes, the president's right, but why? Is it immigration? Are we too politically correct? Do we, or our leaders rather, talk too much and don't produce? We'll take your views on that. And to show we are a true global program in every sense of the word, we're off to Australia. Here's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese.
This is indeed a proud day to be Australian, because make no mistake, this reform will change lives.
That reform is minors not getting onto social media. We'll go down to Australia, see A, how it's gone down, B, is it working? I appreciate very early days. C, is it something that should be looked at here in the UK? Much to do. 7:15 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
European leaders have pushed back against Donald Trump's sharp criticism of America's strongest allies. Sir Keir Starmer says Europe needs to go further on changing human rights rules to tackle illegal migration. And ministers have announced £500 million to revive youth services as part of a decade-long plan. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but Storm Bram still causing issues in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound to Junction 12, Flitwick. Those emergency works are still taking place and only one lane is open. Delays on the M25 clockwise, Junction 5 at the M26, and that's following an accident. The road is partially blocked, and delays of about 20 minutes on the A2 westbound up to the Ebbsfleet turnoff, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. The Elizabeth line is suspended between Paddington and Abbey Wood. Also on the underground, the severe delays on the District and Hammersmith and City lines do continue, and minor delays on the Metropolitan District and Piccadilly lines, and no Lioness line running between Euston and Kilburn High Road.
This is LBC.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for tonight's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers on my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late, but it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop, plus free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Airalo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
It's 18 minutes after 7. Who got through first? Joe, you were the first to call, and we'll come to you in just a moment, and there are other calls coming in. Is President Is President Trump right when he suggests that Europe now is weak, decaying, with poor leaders? Say again, his summation of life in London is absolutely spot on, but it's inappropriate to play the man, I would argue, in that fashion. Play the ball, don't play the man. The story is the front page of the Times with the headline, Europe is weak and decaying, says Trump. possibly the punchier front pages are both the Daily Mail and the Daily Express. The Mail telling us asylum fiasco without end. The Home Office has no idea how many asylum seekers have gone missing since arriving in this country. The National Audit Office has reported no idea. And secondly, the Daily Express focuses on the story we looked at in some detail and asks how many more sexual assaults will it take until the government does something. This is those two teenage Afghan rapists were, of course, jailed. There's a related story on the front page of the Daily Telegraph, which is an interview. They carry an interview with Jordan Bardella, the man tipped to become France's next president. And in the interview with the Daily Telegraph, the leader of the National Rally Party said he would give the United Kingdom permission to turn the boats back and send them back to Calais. He also in the interview says that between them, with Mr. Farage, Nigel Farage at number 10 by Bardella, as the French Prime Minister, they would solve Europe's immigration crisis, as he puts it. I wonder if you agree with that. And on the subject of lastly from the newspapers, related again, the front page of The Guardian, the Prime Minister urging Europe to curb human rights laws to halt the rise of populism. Why is it a crime to have a popular or populist policy, as actually our contributor was saying from the United States? That story is the front page of the LBC app. Starmer urges an ECHR overhaul. European leaders meet to rewrite migration laws. Let's say one other story, very poignant on Sun Online. Sharon Osborne talking of the heartbreaking details, the last words that her beloved husband Ozzy said, as sadly he died. It's a very moving piece there in Sun Online. All right, 7:20 is the time. Joe's in Wandsworth. Is the president right? And if so, what? What is the problem or what are the problems? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, they are, as he's laid them out, that we have a weakened Europe. There's, you know, obviously on one side of Europe, there's a war brewing that could certainly spread across the whole continent.
Yep.
Plus, there's a lot of mass uncontrolled immigration.
Yep.
I'm not saying that nobody that came to this country from somewhere else hasn't done some good things. They have. But we don't know who any of these people are.
Well, it's worse than that, actually, Joe. As we learned from the National Auditor, we don't know how many there are.
Right, exactly. So we don't know
how
many, and we don't know
who. How can you cope with a problem, if you accept that it is an issue, because some people don't even like the word problem, how can you cope with an issue if you don't know the numbers involved?
Well, we're not coping with it, and it would seem that, you know, we just want to brush it under the carpet. A lot of people are trying to tell us it's not a problem at all, and these are people that are in government. They have their own agendas. I'm afraid I don't trust any politicians particularly.
Well,
particularly
you see,
not the ones that are in my government.
If Sakir was listening and he would say, Joe, we are trying to do something. I was with some European leaders yesterday and I called them to rewrite the laws. That's what we're trying to do, is what the PM would probably say to you, Joe. How might you respond?
Well, how long is that going to take? Certain things, it seems, go under the radar almost, and they're put through almost immediately, like the right for us to have a jury trial. However, other things just go on and on and on, and you wonder, really, do they want to stop it, or is this some part of some bigger plan that we're not party to?
Lastly, interviewing one of the papers today, the man who could be the next French Prime Minister, French President, I'm sorry, Jordan Bardella, says he would allow the UK to turn the boats back towards Calais and Gravelines. How would you respond to that, Joe?
Well, let's see you do it. Because until you do, then I'm not. It's just talk.
It's all just talk. Thanks for that, Joe. You've got us started. Seamus, you'll be the next caller in a moment. But I have got a line into Kiev for a story that's sad news and is featured in today's Guardian. And indeed, we'll speak to the journalist who's written it. A member of the UK Armed Forces died yesterday morning following an accident in Ukraine, believed to be the first time a serving member of the British military has been killed in Ukraine since that invasion. Dan Sabah is the Defence and Security Editor with The Guardian and joins us from Kyiv now. Dan, good to have a line into you. What more do we know? Morning to you.
We don't know a lot more. The Ministry of Defence are trying to sort of keep it all fairly close at the moment. One of the reasons why is that there have been British troops in Ukraine pretty much since the early days of the invasion in February 22, including some special forces, but also some people doing innocuous things like guarding the embassy. But Britain's been really, really wants to keep that on the down low, because they don't want to give the Russians the impression that somehow the UK is party to the war, even though we do help. Britain helps Ukraine quite a lot.
Do we know anything about the circumstances of this tragedy?
Well,
I heard something about testing of weapons or something.
Apparently, it happened a weapons test. It's been described as away from the front line. It wasn't as a result of any kind of hostile fire or Russian action, it seems. There is some speculation it may have been an air defense system that went wrong, and some speculation that this may be a member of the SAS or Special Forces, though everyone is very tight-lipped about that sort of thing, and that's not confirmed. So hopefully we'll get a bit more information. Certainly we might get what service they were in and a name and so on. The family have been informed, and the MOD wanted a little bit of time for that.
Towards the end of your piece in The Guardian today, you talk about a Ukrainian memorial produced by the Kyiv War Museum concerning the number of Britons. Tell the listeners about that, Dan.
Well, we had thought, just from counting and following the news, that 15 Brits had died in Ukraine one way or another. None of them serving soldiers, some former soldiers, some humanitarians, a lot of brave people who went out and felt like it was their cause they wanted to be a part of. But yes, the Ukrainian War Museum, Kyiv War Museum, put out a new list, and it had 40 on it. And we now think the number's over 40. So many more than we had thought. A lot more British folk did go out and help out with the war. But this one's different because it's a serving member of the armed forces, of course.
You look after yourself, Dan. Good to see you, Dan. Dan Sabar, thank you. Defence and Security Editor at The Guardian, joining us from Kyiv. He has a piece in today's paper. Seamus, coming to you on the comments from Donald Trump. Let's pick up on what we're hearing on social media and the text. This comes in from Seb. Donald Trump is right. Europe is too weak and far too woke. Absolutely incompetent leaders, including our own clown, Keir. This comes from Andy in Portsmouth. It looks like Donald Trump is more concerned about Britain than Starmer is. If we bring people in from less developed countries, we might end up like them. Same subject, this comes from Lee. We are weak and decaying because of our weak leaders. We have a government with no teeth that are more interested in looking good on the world stage than looking after its people. I don't feel they have their own people's best interests at heart. Seamus in Wallington. Is he right or is he wrong? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. Unfortunately, he's diluted his argument by ridiculous personal attacks on the mayor. I'm no fan of the mayor at all. I think London is a complete and utter mess under this mayor. But anyway, but my concern is that there is a lot of truth in what he's saying about how we are feeling about our country. Our Prime Minister can't stand in front of us and define a woman. He's more interested...
I don't think President Trump would have had trouble answering my question somehow.
No. He's more interested in the rights of people who are coming to this country than the people who are struggling to live in this country. And in terms of leadership in Europe, the immigration issue, we are being swamped by Asia and Africa in volumes that no Western country can cope with. The pace of change is too drastic. And there are only two countries in Europe that are taking a very hard line on this. And look at what's happening in those countries, Hungary and Poland. You look at the crime levels in those countries and correlate them to France, Germany and the UK. We have weak leadership and we're going in the wrong direction. And unfortunately, we're becoming more divided. And whilst this happens, it will get worse.
Well, finally, the president said that it will get to a point, I just want to get the quote, it will get to a point where they can't correct it, is what he said of some European nations. A, do you agree with that? B, how close are we to that particular point, in your view?
Well, look at the numbers, Nick. I mean, this year alone, correct me if I'm wrong, but are we in excess of 70,000 illegals on the boats?
No, over 40,000 currently. I think 46.
I beg your pardon.
That's all right. But, well, it's still a heck of a... But, by the way, we don't know how many people are in this country, as we found out yesterday from the National Audit Office. We have no idea how many asylum seekers have gone missing.
Well, the truer figure could be a lot more, Nick.
Yeah.
So my argument would be that's the size of a standing army. Europe is being invaded, and no one wants to admit that, but it is drastically changing our Western values, our culture, and our ability to live in harmony.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just say that to the family of that poor girl in Leamington Spa, of course, who was the victim of that rape by two Afghan asylum seekers who arrived in a boat months ago and were put in taxpayer-funded accommodation. Seamus, have a good day. Rudy's in Bristol. Do you agree with what President Trump is saying? Is it an unfair attack? Good morning.
Yes, I do agree with him, and I agree with him what he said about the mayor as well. But the more important is...
Well, not the personal side, though.
No, but about him being incompetent and what he's doing in his job.
Yes,
but having said that, he is not a pleasant man. You only have to see how he speaks with Susan Hall in the committee meetings and stuff like that, you know, and how he behaves. And that is not of a good, upstanding person to behave in that manner, you know. So his character speaks for himself. But what I'm saying is also, it's people like Yvette Cooper have got a short-term memory, and people like Ed Davies saying interfering in government politics in the UK. But that's exactly what they did when they went out to America to try and go against him during the presidential elections. So what's the difference?
Rudy, thank you. Many people would say that there is no difference. Also, a lot of people saying, it's all very well to say, when are we going to hear the side for the coalition of the willing and for Sir Keir Starmer and European leaders? Well, give me a call. Very few. There are some coming through, but I sense possibly Trump is more tapped into the mood of much of this country than probably Sir Keir Starmer or Yvette Cooper would ever imagine. But do give me a call if you're against the prevailing wind, and continues, of course, with social media. Alan, coalition of the willing even sounds weak. Pathetic by all of them. This comes in from Andrew in Norwich. Trump is absolutely right, 100%. The Euro talkers need action, not words. On and on it goes. If you feel differently, do let me know. Coming up after the news, we go to problems with the previous administration. Much of the nearly £11 billion lost to COVID, fraud and error will never be recovered, it has been reported. All that money, do you remember Eat Out to Help Out? Well, many of you did help yourself to all that cash, and we're never going to get it back. Plus,
this is not just food, this is M&S food.
Now, a prominent member of the family that established that high street giant, Marks and Spencers, is the latest person to say, I'm a rich person and I'm getting out of here. He sold his house for £18 million and moved to Monaco, and of course will take all the tax payments and probably the staff that he employed. We'll have more on that later. It's 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
European leaders have restated their support for Ukraine after coming under a fierce attack from Donald Trump. He criticised Kiev for failing to hold elections, prompting President Zelensky to say a vote could be held within the next 90 days. Sir Keir Starmer's urged European allies to go further on changing human rights rules to tackle illegal migration. Major talks on reinterpreting the European Convention on Human Rights will begin in Strasbourg later. Australia's Prime Minister says his country has shown enough is enough by implementing a social media ban. Under-16s are spending their first day without access to the platforms, with more than a million accounts blocked. LBC weather brighter for most places, but the storm continuing to cause some problems in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
We cannot have groups of random, bored, culturally incompatible men wandering around towns and villages of places unfortunate enough to be burdened with this. At a minimum, the rule has to be you cannot leave the facility you're being fed and watered in until we know who you are or until your claim has been processed. Otherwise, the status quo carries on with results being like this.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Take the world's best snooker players. One of the most unpredictable seasons. Add the electric atmosphere of Alexandra Palace. It can only be the 2026 Johnston's Paint Masters. Could it be Sean Murphy, Judd Trump, Neil Robertson, or world champion Zhaoxing Tong, who takes the trophy? One thing's certain. Nothing beats the Johnston's Paint Masters. Live. Enjoy our biggest ever fan zone. Watch in style from VIP sofas. Book now. WST.TV/tickets.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, from the 2nd of January, electric cars will be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:33, come back to your reactions. Tough talking Trump, but is he on message here? Particularly, of course, an unnecessary personal attack on London, but the city did... I mean, yesterday it seemed to be gridlock. But let's get into more matters now with Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. And there's disturbing news for us who are paying the taxes here in the UK. What's been discovered when we compare ourselves to other nations? Christian, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, well, we've known now for some time that it seems with every budget, the tax burden on the UK increases to record highs. Record highs are one of the most frequently typed phrases at City AM this year, I'm afraid, and not for good reasons. So the tax burden in the UK is at a record high. And where does it leave us when compared to our continental friends? Well, the OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, the big economics think tank, has looked at that and figured out that Britons pay more income tax than the French, the Germans, or indeed the Americans. And indeed, our property taxes are very high as well. So they've totted up all the kind of complex personal, corporate, and business taxes. And they've said that we have to say that we are one of the least competitive, certainly when it comes to property taxes. And the income and capital gains taxes, the personal taxes we pay, very, very high relative to other countries. It should be noted that there are other countries with a much higher overall tax burden. It won't be surprising to learn that Denmark has a particularly high tax to GDP ratio at 45%. France is also quite a highly taxed country in general, although some of their personal taxes and property taxes are lower than ours. Overall, their tax rates are generally higher, mostly driven by their social security payments. But we know that the UK's tax burden is going to be much higher at the end of this parliament than it is now, which will lead to another record high.
And talking of record highs, there seems to be a record high number of very wealthy people deciding up with this we will not put and leaving the country, the latest of whom is Christian?
An heir. Or of the Marks and Spencer, well, I would say dynasty, but I don't believe he retains interest in it. But we're talking about Jonathan Seif, who is a businessman in his own right, and he is the great-great-grandson of Michael Marks, who established Marks and Spencer back in 1884. You know, he's been quite a prominent figure in the UK. Some of his business ventures in particular, he's a huge operation around the provision of sustainable cups, not least for huge live events such as Taylor Swift tours, etc. And in that venture, the King, no less, was a small investor to support that sustainability business. Anyway, he has upped sticks. I think he's had a footprint in Monaco for some time. He's now formalised his residency in Monaco and he has sold off his £18 million mansion in London. Sources close to him said, look, this is not just a simple case of taking the cash and running. That, you know, there were quite a few mortgages on that property and he's been reassessing his footprint for some time. But it is the case that every week now we can point to, and these are just the ones we know about, people who have decided, in the words of one friend of this gentleman, he doesn't see a reason to live in the UK anymore. Well, you know, plenty of us will find reasons to stick around, but there are a number of people, particularly at the very highest level of income and earnings, who are saying, actually, I'm going to look elsewhere.
Talking of record highs, keeping that theme going, what's happening with the price of chocolate?
Yes, well, here's a little bit of naughty and nice for Christmas shopping this year, Nick, because the price of chocolate has rocketed up over 18% on the year by last month. All sorts of reasons for that, everything from the weather to crop conditions across the world. So a big spike in the price of chocolate. But on the other hand, the cost of, I would say, it says here average, I would probably characterise it as a fairly bog standard Christmas dinner, has fallen. If you're going to buy a frozen turkey, that has dropped by 3.6%. But potatoes up 1% and cranberry sauce has increased 10%. So these measures, you know, these prices would be a lot higher were it not for the ruthless and disciplined discounting of the retailers to try to lure people in for their Christmas shops. Obviously, if you're going to go for your traditional free-range, hand-reared, hand-plucked goose, it's going to be a little more expensive than the frozen turkeys. But yeah, spare a thought for the price of those chocolate coins at the bottom of your stocking, Lynn.
Don't even get Christian started on the cost of Brandy Butter. Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. We'll talk around the same time tomorrow. Thank you. We're looking at the, reflecting on the comments from Donald Trump. Europe is weak and decaying. Paul says it's pathetic. People are falling for the nonsense coming out of Trump's mouth. He said the countries in Europe are weak for not stopping the war in Ukraine, but he seems to forget he'd stop the war in 24 hours. Susie in London, sad to hear you siding with Trump and encouraging others to do the same. I voted for Mayor Khan. I think he's doing a good job for London. Gosh, public transport here is much better than other cities for one. Well, that's because virtually every road is now just a bus lane, I would suggest. Eric in Enfield, look at the record number of Americans applying to live in the UK after Trump's return to office. Andy in Brent Cross, who's right? Is Donald Trump right? And if so, why? Or is he wrong? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I think Donald Trump is just trying to stir up. Europe is the greatest civilization of the world. I think he is just stirring up things and drawing attention from his own problems in America. And he wants us to be in war with Russia.
I think if you talk about a cradle of civilization, you're onto a very strong argument. But if we look where we are now, we're not where we were. Just before Brexit, the economic growth figures were broadly the same for the European Union bloc and the United States at roughly 2.4%. Now, all those years on, America, the US, is at 3.8%, and the average across the European Union is 1.1%. They're getting something right as regards the stewardship of their economy that we're clearly not, Andy.
We are struggling at the moment. I'm not saying we're not struggling.
Well, we've struggled for like the last 9 years. That's the European Union, by the way.
European Union has struggled. There is a lot of things we need to reform. The whole of European Union and the whole of UK, it needs a big...
But that's what President Trump is saying, Andy, isn't it? We're getting to a point where we're getting to a point where they won't correct it and they can't correct it.
We'll definitely correct it. We've been here before, we've done it, and we will do it as being united together. We will get through this. But Donald Trump is accusing people or, you know, taking things personal with the mayor of London. Okay, I agree there is problems in London, but to accuse and, you know, the way he was talking about it, I don't agree with.
I'm grateful for your input, Andy. Have yourself a safe day. That's what we're about. Get involved. Andy Pudding, I have to say that seems to be a minority view at the moment. We'll take more calls on that. 7:41. And the disturbing news that billions of pounds lost to COVID fraud and error under the last Conservative administration is unlikely ever to be recovered, so a report has said. The COVID Counter-Fraud Commissioner, Tom Hayhoe, has found all but £11 billion, 10.9 to be precise, was lost to the taxpayer during the pandemic as fraudsters exploited schemes such as furlough, bounce-back loans, eat-out to help-out and one-off grants. More now from George Parker, who's political editor of the Financial Times. This is a vast sum of money, George. Why is it proving so difficult to get our hands on some of it? Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, it's a vast sum. I mean, it's about 11 billion quid lost to fraud and error, which is about roughly what the government spends every year on the Justice Department and the criminal justice system. So it's a huge amount of money. And look, I mean, there have been attempts over the last few years to try to get some of this money back. Some of it has been recovered, about 1.8 billion pounds altogether. But you know, that's about 1 in 10 of all that money that was lost to fraud. It's just disappeared, basically, Nick, and you know, to the outrage of the Chancellor, you know, the Exchequer, Rachel Reeves.
Hindsight being 2020 vision, what checks should have been put in place? When I've challenged Rishi Sunak as Chancellor and indeed as Prime Minister, he would always say this: we had to move with that speed, or mill businesses would have folded, more people would have lost their jobs. George.
Well, look, I mean, that is certainly the claim of Rishi Sunak. It was an extraordinary situation. They take it as a matter of pride that they were able to set up schemes like the furlough scheme to keep people attached to their workplace in very difficult conditions. And they admitted at the time that there would be fraud and this was inevitable. But, you know, obviously, you know, if you look back at the way that some of the contracts, for example, around PPE equipment were allocated, you know, much greater checks could have been and should have been conducted on that. So I don't think that's get out of jail free card. But I think it is fair to say that the Tories do regard the schemes they put in place to keep the economy sort of collapsing at the time is something they're proud of.
Grateful as ever for your time, George Parker, political editor of the Financial Times. Let's give you the key points of some of this expenditure. The total fraud, as George was just saying, comes in at 10.9 billion pounds. That would fund free school meals for 2.7 million children for 8 years. £1.8 billion in fraud and error has been recovered. Just 1.8. Much of the shortfall, and I'm now quoting from this this lengthy report, over, what is it, 110-page report by the COVID Counter-Fraud Commissioner, Tom Hayhoe. I quote, much of the shortfall is now beyond recovery. Over 300 allegations of fraud totaling £35 million have been reported to the fraud hotline, and more than 38 billion items of PPE were bought between February and July at the peak of that pandemic back in 2020. Let's come back to our conversation about Donald Trump. John's in Kilburn. Do you agree or disagree with the US president on this? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Great to have me on. It's not so much do I disagree or agree with him. I kind of like saying, listen to what this guy's saying, and actually living in England, it doesn't work out, Nick. Nick, look, two-thirds of human beings don't live on, haven't got electricity or water running to their domain.
We're not in the United Kingdom or Europe, I don't think, John.
Pardon?
I say not in the United Kingdom. This could be good. Not in the United Kingdom or Europe, John.
Yeah, what? That we've got water and electricity running to our domain.
Yeah, fortunately, we do have to our domain.
We do.
We have got the mains to our domain. The domain mains are working.
Yeah, this is what I'm trying to say, Nick. So why are we talking down our country?
I'll give you the growth figures. United States, 3.8. UK, 0.6. Europe, 1.1. Our economies are stagnating. Theirs are going gangbusters.
Yeah, but Nick, that is because of what our so-called fiscal policy that we've been running for the last 40 years. It's turned out to be an absolute bummer.
I'll just about allow that. Bear in mind there are children listening. How is the fiscal policy different in the US from the UK? You said it's down to the UK fiscal. What is it that the US is doing that UK doesn't, or vice versa then? Why have they got growth more than three times ours?
Well, Nick, I mean, I'm not an economist. Neither am I. But like, I'm going on like how you feel in the country,
Don't you feel that at the moment we are presented, as we have been in the past, with enormous challenges, and in many businesses you're having to work flat out just to stay where you were 5 years ago.
I totally understand and agree with and concur with that, Nick. I mean, charges that we've been charging in our firm, it's like it's been the same way for the last probably decade.
I don't need you to name your company. What work are you in? What do you do, John?
Mechanical services, Nick.
Mechanical services. All right, you take care with all those tools and all the kit that you'll be servicing or working on today, John. I appreciate that. I've got to go because I'm late to the news. Coming up after the news, government plans to offer young people somewhere to go and something meaningful to do. What does this even mean? We'll hear from the relevant government minister. 7:46, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Keir Starmer's called on European countries to agree tougher action to tackle illegal migration. Leaders have rejected Donald Trump's claim they are weak and overseeing a decaying continent. And ministers have announced £500 million to revive youth services as part of a 10-year plan for young people. LBC weather brighter for most places, but staying blustery with heavy rain in Scotland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound to junction 12 at Flitwick. The emergency works are taking place and only one lane is open. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise to junction 5 at the M26. It's because of an accident. There are delays of about an hour on the approach. In Walthamstow, there are lengthy delays on the North Circular Road westbound to the Crooked Billet interchange. A car was on fire earlier and one lane is closed. Eastbound is open but very slow because of onlookers. On the trains, no Elizabeth line between Paddington and Abbey Wood. No London Overground Lioness line running between Euston and Kilburn High Road following a power failure.
LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsbury's.co.uk/help/Nectar Prices.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken, roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the future you want. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Imad, a GCSE student in Year 11.
Alongside my core GCSEs, such as Maths, English and Science, I study creative subjects such as Media, Drama, Art and Design, Business and Music Technology, which are all recognised by the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Train to Brighton with the besties.
Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, oh, going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to the President Trump debate in a moment. It's 10 minutes before 8. And ambitious plans for our young people are published today. A national youth strategy, the first of its kind in some 15 years, will be published. Talking about spending £500 million, or half a billion pounds of our money. But where is it going and what's the thinking behind it? Let's turn to the relevant senior member of the government, Labour MP and Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, Lisa Nandy, who joins me now. OK, what exactly does it mean? What age group are we talking about, Secretary of State? Good morning.
So, good morning. Well, we're talking about aged 11 upwards, and this is the first national plan that this country has had for young people since before the iPhone was invented. In that time, a lot has changed, as you can imagine, Nick. But what we found through this State of the Nation report, the biggest conversation government has ever had with young people, is that this is the most connected generation in history, but also the most isolated. Far too many young people have found that the places and the spaces that they used to be able to go, the adults that they used to be able to talk to, have been taken away. And as a consequence, far too many of them have retreated into their bedrooms, where they're spending a lot of time online, where the relationships are not healthy, and it's denting their confidence to be able to go out and live the lives that they want to live. It's not normal, it's not okay, and we're determined that that's going to change.
Well, all strength to you, and let's hope it works. In practical terms, does this mean, I don't say this in a derogatory fashion, does this mean return to youth clubs, or what is it that you're looking to do?
It does. It means a new generation of youth clubs and youth facilities. It means sports and arts organisations throwing open their doors and making sure that young people have access to the arts, sport, music, dance, drama, the things that help you find your feet, find your confidence, build resilience, teamwork. But it also means a new generation, not just of youth workers, but of information, support, advice, guidance to the adults that young people trust to help them navigate the complexities of the world that they're growing up in.
Do you think, and you rightly identified the iPhone, Lisa and Andy, do you think the iPhone generation are ready to go dancing and play table tennis and things such as that?
I think they're clamouring for it. When we launched the youth strategy yesterday in Peckham, in an amazing place, Peckham Levels, a youth facility, it was absolutely packed. It was buzzing. In Wigan, where I live, the onside youth zone, if you go there in the evening, you're just greeted with a riot of noise.
Really?
With young people from all of the surrounding villages and the town itself, who want to spend time with their friends, they want to push boundaries, and they, most of all, they want to have conversations with adults who they trust, who can help them. What we've found through this State of the Nation report is that far too many young people don't have that. A significant number, up to one in five growing up in England today, don't have a single adult in the world who they trust, who they say can help them with the challenges that they face. And we are determined that that is going to change.
Well, the best of luck with that. Where are the pilots, or where are the first wave going to be launched? Ultimately, how many would you want across the whole of the country, Lisa and Andy?
Well, we're announcing 50 new Young Futures Hubs. These are basically places where young people can go, where not only can they have access to the things that make life worthwhile, you know, the arts, the sport, the music, the dance, the drama, but also have, when they need help with mental health challenges, when they need help working out how to get a job or how to get a training placement, they can access that as well. But that's not the only thing that we're doing. We're also making sure that the money that we spend across the country on youth activities is driven by what communities and young people in those communities need. So whereas in the past you might have had a minister like me coming onto your programme, Nick, and saying, I've got a brand new shiny scheme and everyone's going to get the same, what we're recognising is that in some parts of the country you might need a youth club because there might not be one there. But in other parts of the country like mine, you've got an amazing youth facility, but what you might need is a minibus or help with transport for young people to get there. We'll be driven by what they need and make sure that every pound that we spend counts.
And when will the doors open?
Well, the doors are already open on a lot of facilities around the country, but they need an upgrade. So we'll be spending that money immediately and making sure that we get that money to communities.
I've got a note about hubs next year in Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester, County Durham, Nottingham, Bristol, and Tower Hamlets, and Brighton and Hove. So those are brand new ones next March, are they?
They're brand new ones next March, and then we'll continue to phase that rollout over the next few years.
Okay. To other matters, and in the papers today, you won't have time to see that, that's my job, but the Bob Villan story has raised its head again. The Daily Telegraph reporting that they've launched, that Bob Villan's launching a defamation lawsuit against the Irish broadcaster ITE and its coverage of their performance at the Glastonbury Festival. Now, 6 months ago, soon after that festival, you told the House of Commons you expected answers without delay from the BBC. Have you had that full report, and when did it arrive?
So I've had numerous conversations with the BBC about this, and I am confident that it's being treated with seriousness at the highest level.
You said without delay 6 months ago, Secretary of State.
Well, and they have stepped up to meet that challenge. Nick, I've been really frustrated, and I think openly frustrated with the slowness of the action of the BBC leadership over the last 18 months since I became Culture Secretary, and I won't shy away from saying so when I think they get it wrong. But in this instance, I think they have recognised that that was, in the chairman's own words, a catastrophic error to broadcast that live from Glastonbury, and they've put in place a number of measures.
You're still waiting on answers, though, and as I understand it, they've only released the findings from its own editorial complaints unit and some policy changes. We deserve to know more. We do pay for this organisation, Lisa and Andy.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think it's absolutely essential that people can have trust in their national broadcaster. But to give you an example, one of the changes that has been made is about live streaming of events like Glastonbury to make sure that there is a time delay on that so that better editorial decisions can be made, more senior people involved in the decisions about how to categorise risk. And in this particular case, I have to say that there was a risk assessment done. This was categorised as high risk and then it was broadcast anyway. The BBC leadership has put in place measures to make sure that that doesn't happen again, and I'm pleased that they have.
But few people are closer to the charter renewal than you. Surely this is the time that we see considerable openness and candour from the BBC if they're going to rebuild the trust, Secretary of State.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. But also, as you rightly recognise, this is a moment where we are pausing to think about how the BBC is structured, how it works, and how people can have trust
but
and confidence.
But they do mark their own homework, lastly, on this, don't they? They do get away with marking their own homework, Lisa.
Well, not on our
you're
watch.
You're still waiting for answers for 6 months. I'm surprised you're still waiting. I'm surprised I haven't been more thumping at the desk and angry emails sent.
Well, no, I've had answers, and what I've had most of all is action. What people in Parliament, across the board, parliamentarians were asking for was accountability. We've had staffing changes, we've had changes to processes, and we've had a recognition that this was a catastrophic mistake that cannot happen again.
Is Donald Trump still suing the BBC, do you know?
So, I speak to the chairman at the moment several times a week, as you can imagine, and my understanding is, as of a couple of days ago, that legal letter was received. It's still there. That threat has not been withdrawn. The BBC has responded to that, and that they've had no further correspondence since that time.
Do you agree with President Trump that we are weak and decaying across Europe?
I don't. I think that there is a serious challenge when it comes to immigration that this government inherited, particularly illegal immigration, and the last government lost control of the borders. I think that is a real problem for this country, that people can't have trust in the immigration system that they have. And our Home Secretary has wasted no time in taking action to put that right.
You've taken the grooming gang inquiry very seriously because I know it surrounds your areas. How disappointed are you that many survivors are questioning the stewardship, as it's been appointed as a Labour peer, again, possibly marking homework, as many local authorities involved are Labour-run?
So I've known Anne Longfield, who the Labour peer, who has now stepped back from that role and is no longer sitting as a Labour peer while she does the grooming gang's inquiry.
But she was a Labour peer upon appointment, Lisa.
She was, but I've known her for over 20 years, long before she was a Labour peer. I first met her when I was at the Children's Society working with children, including children who were the victims of grooming gangs. She speaks truth to power. She is a fearless advocate for children and young people. She's got herself, you know, she's been heavily criticised at times because she will not hesitate to speak truth to power. I completely understand why victims and survivors are sceptical about any action from authorities, having been let down repeatedly over decades. But I believe she is absolutely the right person to earn back their trust and confidence and get the right action out of this inquiry.
Last minute or so together, and coming back to your idea of the Youth Matters scheme, down in Australia, you will be aware that minors now have had effectively social media switched off. Is that something you would look at? Is that something you would ever consider recommending to the United Kingdom?
We're following it really closely, but in this National Youth Strategy, we heard from over 14,000 young people in this country, and we very specifically talked to them about their experiences of social media. They were really concerned that if you introduced a blanket ban, not only would it be very difficult to make that work, it might push young people into other parts of the internet that are unregulated. What they wanted most of all was adults who could support them and help them to navigate this. Girls in particular told us that they were really concerned that if people couldn't see what was wrong with what was happening online, they wouldn't be able to see what was wrong with that same sort of behaviour in the real world. And that's what we're addressing with the first National Youth Strategy in over two decades.
We've talked about such serious matters, as I probably won't talk to you again this side of Christmas. Let's finish on a positive. And as Culture Secretary, I'm sure you want to wish happy birthday to not least, of course, as I'm speaking to the Labour MP for Wigan, and it's not far from the setting of that. 65 years old today. Happy birthday to Corrie, Coronation Street. Lisa Nandy, your view of the show and your favourite character down the years.
So, Rita, obviously, I mean, come on.
Why is Rita your favourite? I want
superb.
More Lisa.
Everyone needs a bit more Rita in their lives. Common sense and just a northern soul. Happy birthday to Coronation Street and long live Rita.
And a powerhouse on British television. Good to have you on. Lisa Nandy, thank you. Good luck with that initiative, Youth Matters. We may re-examine that actually later in the hour as those ambitious plans are revealed. We've got to 2 minutes after eight. LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Keir Starmer has urged European leaders to curb human rights laws to tackle illegal migration. Talks on reinterpreting the European Convention on Human Rights will begin at the Council of Europe later. LBC's Guy Stewart has more details.
This human rights law, among other things, that has been getting in the way of asylum removals, where migrants can challenge those decisions based on a range of harms from risk of death, but also things like a right to private and family life. This is Article 8 of the ECHR, and it's being discussed at a meeting in Strasbourg. Justice Secretary David Lammy, the Deputy Prime Minister, is being sent there today.
A separate report says failures in Britain's asylum system are a result of repeated short-term reactive policies. The National Audit Office looked at 5,000 asylum cases lodged 3 years ago and found 56% remained unresolved. The Home Office says it's implementing sweeping changes. President Zelensky has indicated Ukraine could hold elections within 90 days. He's asked the US and European allies to ensure security for a vote. It follows Donald Trump's sharp criticism of Europe and claim that Kiev is using the war as an excuse to put off elections. The Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, has suggested Britain has no plans for an Australia-style social media ban. Under-16s in Australia are spending their first day without access to services like Instagram and TikTok. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says it shows enough is enough. Ms Nandy has told Nick it's important to take children's views into account.
They were really concerned that if you introduced a blanket ban, not only would it be very difficult to make that work, it might push young people into other parts of the internet that are unregulated. What they wanted most of all was adults who could support them and help them to navigate this.
Ms Nandy has unveiled a 10-year plan intended to improve prospects for young people. It includes £500 million worth of investment for youth clubs and creating so-called future hubs. A section of one of Scotland's major roads remains closed after a number of lorries were blown over. The southbound M74 is shut near Abington as Storm Bram continues to be felt. Yellow warnings for strong winds are in place across most of Scotland for the rest of the day. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 96.42. After closing down three yesterday, the pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, a brighter day for most places, but the storm still causing some problems in Scotland, where it'll be blustery with outbreaks of heavy rain. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get a sharing bag of Doritos Chilli Heatwave for just £1.45, down from £2.50 with your Tesco Club card. Finding great prices, that's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of large stores, Doritos 180 grams and 2nd of January. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. It's 6 minutes after eight on Wednesday, December the 10th. Coming up in this hour, the grooming gang inquiry is launched, and almost immediately there are howls of anguish and fury from arguably the most important people of the lot, many of the survivors. So what has angered them? How have they got it, what they would say, so badly wrong? In other news, Youth Matters, that's the name of the scheme that will see hundreds of millions of pounds, half a billion pounds, channeled into effectively bringing back youth clubs. Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy, I asked, is there actual any desire for these?
I think they're clamouring for it. When we launched the youth strategy yesterday in Peckham, it was absolutely packed. It was buzzing in Wigan, where I live, the onside youth zone. If you go there in the evening, you're just greeted with a riot of noise.
As the NHS urges, suggests we should all start wearing masks again because of the widespread of flu, the reaction from Conservative Party leader of His Majesty's Opposition, Kemi Badenoch.
I personally think that face coverings can be a barrier to social interaction, social cohesion. I do worry about a mask mandate. I don't think government should be mandating anything.
Plus, later in this hour,
an LBC investigation can reveal that a former Metropolitan Police officer was accused of being involved in a London grooming gang. I'm Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The fury that greeted the announcing of the grooming gang inquiry and who was to chair it was almost immediate. And here with the full background, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clarke. It didn't get off to the start they would have wanted, Natasha. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, potentially not. So this is going to be a national public inquiry lasting 3 years. £65 million going to be spent forcing people to come and forcing evidence to be given to try to get to the bottom of how so many women, girls and some boys and men as well were failed by authorities for decades as grooming gangs abuse them. Now, the inquiry is also going to explicitly consider the backgrounds of offenders, including their ethnicity and religion. We know that has been at the heart of what some victims think.
This was what Keir Starmer once said, was politicians were jumping on the far-right bandwagon, wasn't it? Is this the same inquiry of which we speak?
Indeed, indeed he did. So, obviously, after lots of political pressure, the Prime Minister, after Baroness Louise Casey did then recommend that this inquiry take place, he did then change his mind. The Home Secretary yesterday confirmed that Baroness Anne Longfield will be the chairwoman of this inquiry after a pretty lengthy, chaotic process, it's fair to say. It saw two of the other candidates to chair this drop out earlier this year. Victims said they felt taken for a ride. They felt they didn't trust the former police officer and the former social worker could do the job. Shabana Mahmood told MPs yesterday that this would be a moment of reckoning.
We must root out this evil once and for all. The sickening acts of a minority of evil men, as well as those in positions of authority who look the other way, must not be allowed to marginalise or demonise entire communities of law-abiding citizens. What is required now is a moment of reckoning. We must cast fresh light on this darkness.
Now, Baroness Longfield, she's a long-time charity boss. She's a campaigner, a leading advocate for children, formerly the Children's Commissioner, of course, during COVID, and did, according to many people, do a very good job there. The government hopes that this advocate will restore trust in the process, but Nick, she is, of course, a Labour peer. She's going to give up the whip. However, many people are concerned that she may be a little bit nervous in probing local and national government. She insisted yesterday that she will not shy away from difficult or uncomfortable truths wherever we find them. Of course, there are victims at the heart of this. I spoke to some of them earlier this week. Fiona Goddard, who you spoke to a few months ago, Nick, said she had had no more contact with this inquiry since she and others had left, but she would engage when there is a chair in place.
My main focus is that this inquiry is needed, it is important, and I do want it to work. But until then, I do not want to have any engagement in it. I do feel quite disrespected by the way that I was treated publicly and the lack of attempts to try and rectify that.
And she said yesterday that because Baroness Longfield is from the Labour Party, it does raise concerns about how impartial and independent this inquiry could be. Theresa Smith is a mother of a victim. She told me she thinks that members of the panel were cherry-picked.
People on the panel will be used as a scapegoat at the end of all this.
Yep.
That's what I feel. Jess Phillips has cherry-picked some her people who she wanted. Now, why couldn't parents be on that panel? Because we've lived it firsthand alongside our children.
Now, you also put some of those accusations just a few minutes ago to Lisa Nandy, the Culture Secretary. Here was how she responded.
I've known Anne Longfield, who the Labour peer, who has now stepped back from that role and is no longer sitting as a Labour peer while she does the grooming gangs inquiry.
But she was a Labour peer upon appointment, Lisa.
She was, but I've known her for over 20 years, long before she was a Labour peer. I first met her when I was at the Children's Society working with children, including children who were the victims of grooming gangs. She speaks truth to power. She is a fearless advocate for children and young people. She's got herself, you know, she's been heavily criticised at times because she will not hesitate to speak truth to power. I completely understand why victims and survivors are sceptical about any action from authorities, having been let down repeatedly over decades. But I believe she is absolutely the right person to earn back their trust and confidence and get the right action out of this inquiry.
And it's fair to say, Nick, that during COVID, she was one of those people absolutely pressing the government to protect children at all costs. So can she hold truth to power? That, of course, will be the question that hopefully will be answered in this inquiry. A long battle for these survivors, still a long way to go, but a big step forward now in that journey for many, now that we've finally got that chair and that inquiry can get off the ground. From March.
OBC's political editor Natasha Clark reporting 12 minutes after 8. Let's bring in the conversation Jane Senior, who has experience in this. Jane's a former youth worker and was a whistleblower in the Rotherham grooming gang scandal. Thank you for coming on the show. If I may address you as Jane. Jane, how confident, how comfortable are you with the appointment of a chair and the and those who will assist her? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. I think for me, one of the most positive things of this is we've actually now got off the start line. I've known her.
Respectfully, if you've got the wrong driver at the helm, and I'm not saying she is, but it's not much help if you're at the start line and you've got the wrong person at the helm.
But I do think we need to give it a chance and see that, and it needs to be challenged and led by survivors, victims, parents, other members that need to be part of developing the terms of reference and kind of holding the chair and the panel to account and kind of steering in the right direction, because we do need answers. I mean, for me, I've lived in this world for over 20 years. For some of the victims, it's 25, 30 years that they're actually waiting for an answer. And we need to begin this process to get some of those answers and hold these people to account that they deliver what we're paying them to deliver.
But you understand why some of the victims are unhappy, Jane. We have a Labour peer looking into scandals that went on in mostly Labour-run local authorities. Yeah. It's marking their own homework, is their fears, Jane.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, the kind of the saving grace in this for me yesterday was finding out that Louise Casey is going to be supporting it. And we know that Louise Casey, you know, came into Rotherham. We know what she did in Rotherham. And Louise Casey does hold true to power and doesn't leave any stone unturned. So for me, I think, you know, having her as part of this is going to assist and help that we get the answers that we so desperately need.
But it'll be 3 years, I understand. Yet more time. We want it done comprehensively. No one wants a rush job, Jane. That's in no one's interest. But does it really take another 3 years for these poor victims to get some kind of closure?
I'm hoping that we're going to turn this around quicker, Nick. I really am, because, you know, I would imagine in 3 years for some people it's 30, 40 years that they're waiting for answers.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to see an inquiry that not just starts, but actually reports all the way through to the end. We don't wait till the end. And we don't end up with another IPSA where there's recommendations and we kind of put them in a drawer somewhere and forget about them for another 10 years, because that's not fair on anybody that participates in this inquiry. And we need to make sure, as somebody said earlier, that we do involve parents in this, because parents seem to have been lost throughout all of this, because they've lived through some horrendous times, just like victims have as well.
Grateful for your time, Jane. Thank you. Good to talk with you again. You're a former youth worker and you were a whistleblower in the Rotherham grooming gang scandal. The people involved, I'm not questioning a moment Anne Longfield's abilities, Baroness Longfield, my apologies, but she stood out, a Labour peer. Zoe Bellingham, who was Her Majesty's Inspector Constabulary, because it was prior, obviously, to the death of the late Queen, and the former Chief Executive of Southwark Council. These are just like professional I'm not... Please don't take this as personal. But wouldn't you have confidence if they said, we're going to... I'll tell you who, Lord Stevens. Probably the last decent Met Commissioner we had. Lord Stevens is going to be part of it. As is a retired judge. As is the former head of the British Army. Why people it with people who this is their whole background? Why not have a fresh set of eyes of people who are used to, by the way, being able to discover truth, fact from fiction, i.e. Commissioner of the Met, High Court judge, someone who leads the army? Why don't we have people like that? Or am I alone in thinking that? We'll pick up on your views on that. And tellingly, the first shake-up of the provision of youth facilities since the invention of the iPhone, 15 years we've waited for this, outlined this morning here on LBC by Culture Secretary Lisa Nandy.
Far too many of them have retreated into their bedrooms where they're spending a lot of time online, where the relationships are not healthy, and it's denting their confidence to be able to go out and live the lives that they want to live.
Will your child or would you go to one of those youth clubs? 8:16 LBC News headlines then. Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister has urged European leaders to curb human rights laws to tackle illegal migration ahead of a major summit. A report says failures in Britain's asylum system are a result of repeated short-term reactive policies. And the Culture Secretary has suggested Britain has no plans for an Australia-style social media ban. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but the storm still causing some issues in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound, heading towards Junction 12 at Flitwick. It's because of the emergency works taking place and only one lane is open, and those delays are back past Junction 14 at Milton Keynes. Lengthy delays continue on the M25 clockwise. It's slow from Junction 3 at the M20 to 4 at Orpington. It was after an accident. Very busy on the North Circular Road westbound, heading towards Walthamstow after that car was on fire earlier. The fire is now out and all the lanes are back open, but it's still very slow. Elizabeth Line services are now running between Abbey Wood and Paddington, but with severe delays. Also severe delays on the Piccadilly line between Acton Town and Uxbridge.
This is LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com. This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £350,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5 p.m. Friday and you could get a call with £350,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822-00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only, global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware no one's actually allowed to use, or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
Unwrap daily surprises this December with the Little Plus Advent Calendar. Every day until Christmas, you could get exclusive offers like money off coupons and even the chance to win a year's free shopping. Check the Little Plus app every day to open 24 unmissable offers. Lidl, more to value.
18 plus GB only, while stocks last. Minimum spend required. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 8, an inauspicious start to this grooming gang inquiry, which will cost around £65 million and take probably 3 years. Now, as my colleague, the political editor on LBC, Natasha Clark, referenced, there have already been people who quit the grooming gang inquiry because they were unhappy with it, one of whom joins us now, Elizabeth, which is not her real name, but is a survivor, and who left the inquiry, or the pre-inquiry, earlier this year, joins me now. Elizabeth, thank you very much for coming on the line. Just briefly remind the listeners of your unfortunate involvement in this story. Good morning.
Hi, so I'm a Rotherham grooming gang survivor. I was groomed in the early 2000s, and we failed absolutely systematically.
How hopeful were you when it was first announced that this inquiry might answer so many questions that must be racing around your head 24 hours a day?
Absolutely. So my abuse was 24 years ago. The Alexis J report came out 11 years ago. I've tirelessly campaigned on the subject for the truth and justice, not just for myself, but everyone around the country, including the families, you know, and this was kind of our... It was exciting, and I thought, yes, finally, we might have a voice, and then it all went wrong.
In what way has it gone wrong, do you think, Elizabeth?
I joined the National Inquiry Panel, and I attended around 3 meetings. After the first meeting, I was feeling very, very uncomfortable. I just had a really bad feeling.
Sorry, do you mind my asking what caused your discomfort?
It was just the way that it was conducted, like speaking to us like we were children, like emails saying gentle reminder, things like that.
I heard from another survivor that she was told that there was to be no contact between survivors during this process. Yeah. And she told me how, and my heart goes out to you for what you've endured, but how often you gain strength and support from each other because you've shared the pain and anguish that you've experienced.
Absolutely. There's only a survivor what knows how another survivor feels. Absolutely. We were told we weren't allowed to tell anybody out of the meetings what were happening. It were fully closed down, basically.
What do you think should happen now? Do you have any level of... How much confidence do you have left in it?
I have none. And I know that sounds really negative to everybody listening.
No, but you've got to be realistic. I've asked you a question and I want to hear the answer. And can anything be done? Or if you had your way, would you sort of rip it up and start over?
Absolutely, I would, yeah, because
Hello?
The fact that we need a judge-led inquiry or it's not going to work.
Elizabeth, thank you for your time. I know that's not your real name, but thank you for sharing what you did and your level of frustration. We'll come to some of the social media that's coming in. Elizabeth, thank you for that. Phil says, we need a totally independent to head up the grooming gang inquiry. This is yet another left-wing farce and will be micromanaged by Sir Keir Starmer. Well, remember, Starmer, I made a note of it, actually, and I'm so sorry, I put the note in my pocket. He said anyone who's called for a public inquiry was jumping on the far-right bandwagon. Do you remember that? Which was echoed by his then-Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, who said it was made far more sense to have a series of local inquiries. And then presumably they've decided to jump on the far-right bandwagon and go ahead and spend £65 million and spend 3 years of our money. And it would appear to have very much missed the spot. Again, I say, I'm not suggesting the professional credibility at all of the three key people involved, Baroness Longfield, Zoe Bellingham, Eleanor Kelly. But why? They just seem to be professional inquiry sitters, if there is such an expression. Let's get new eyes in there. Feature a couple of emails on other subjects. We started the show by going to those Donald Trump comments that says Europe is weak and decaying. James in Chessington is furious. You keep referring to UK's growth forecast but fail to acknowledge the devastating effects that Brexit has had. You're being disingenuous or stupid. Well, I remind you, I suggest weren't listening at the start of the show. Prior to Brexit in 2015, the UK and the European Union's growth figures were both 2.4% and the United States was 2.6%. Okay? Now, almost 10 years on, 9.5 years on, the United States' growth is 3.8%. Europe's is 1.1%. The United Kingdom is lower than that. So, if Brexit has been such a disaster for the UK, and I'm not saying it's been properly executed, but why has the rest of the European Union not kept up with the growth figure that it had at the time of Brexit? Surely the other way of looking at it was that if the UK had been able to ally itself better with the United States, we might be looking more at a 3.8% growth than a 1.1% growth that the European Union has currently. But James, I sense people like you don't like to have the figures actually put to you, because you will forever believe that every single woe in this land is down to a very badly executed Brexit. Let's come back to the conversation we had about youth clubs. Is that the way forward? Shocking number of people now feel, young people as we heard, alienated. And the government pointing out that this is the first review in 15 years. How will it work? What are the ambitions? Or what are the level of popularity? Does that generation, we're talking youngsters 11 and above, do they want to learn how to dance or play the violin or play table tennis? Lisa Nandy, the relevant secretary, culture, says yes.
We're talking about age 11 upwards, and this is the first national plan that this country has had for young people since before the iPhone was invented. In that time, a lot has changed, as you can imagine, Nick. But what we found through this State of the Nation report, the biggest conversation government has ever had with young people, is that this is the most connected generation in history, but also the most isolated. Far too many young people have found that the places and the spaces that they used to be able to go, the adults that they used to be able to talk to, have been taken away. And as a consequence, far too many of them have retreated into their bedrooms, where they're spending a lot of time online, where the relationships are not healthy, and it's denting their confidence to be able to go out and live the lives that they want to live. It's not normal, it's not okay, and we're determined that that's going to change.
Well, all strength to you, and let's hope it works. In practical terms, does this mean, I don't say this in a derogatory fashion, does this mean return to youth clubs? jobs, or what is it that you're looking to do?
It does. It means a new generation of youth clubs and youth facilities. It means sports and arts organisations throwing open their doors and making sure that young people have access to the arts, sport, music, dance, drama, the things that help you find your feet, find your confidence, build resilience, teamwork. But it also means a new generation, not just of youth workers, but of information, support, advice, guidance to the adults that young people trust to help them navigate the complexities of the world that they're growing up in.
Do you think, and you rightly identified the iPhone, Lisa and Andy, do you think the iPhone generation are ready to go dancing and play table tennis and things such as that?
I think they're clamouring for it. When we launched the youth strategy yesterday in Peckham, in an amazing place, Peckham Levels, a youth facility, it was absolutely packed. It was buzzing. In Wigan, where I live, the onside youth zone, if you go there in the evening, you're just greeted with a riot of noise.
Really?
With young people from all of the surrounding villages and the town itself, who want to spend time with their friends, they want to push boundaries, and they, most of all, they want to have conversations with adults who they trust, who can help them. What we've found through this State of the Nation report is that far too many young people don't have that. A significant number, up to one in five growing up in England today, don't have a single adult in the world who they trust, who they say can help them with the challenges that they face. And we are determined that that is going to change.
We might pick up on your calls in reaction to that, but it is the grooming gang, or the rather unfortunate start, that's dominating the conversation. This comes from Mike in Coulston. Truth to Power, Institution Inquiry, all language, not even sure many will understand. Neil, why is the grooming gang inquiry taking 3 years? This is a lot of time wasting. Oh, here's an interesting point. This is a lot of time wasting. We may not get the outcome before the next election. That would be helpful to Labour, wouldn't it? Reminding you that most of the local authorities involved in this inquiry, most of them, not all, were Labour dominated, were Labour run. Tess says, you're not alone in thinking that it's because they want to protect their rhetoric. So a lot of people are thinking on that. All right, we may return to that. But also, coming up after the news,
an LBC investigation can reveal that a former Metropolitan Police officer was accused of being involved in a London grooming gang. I'm Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
Very much related to the conversation we're having. We'll continue with that after the news. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news headlines are read by Thomas Watts.
Talks on redrawing Europe's approach to tackling illegal migration are due to begin in Strasbourg. Sir Keir Starmer has urged fellow leaders to go further on changing the ECHR to make protecting borders easier. The Culture Secretary's told Nick that ministers are keeping a very close eye on Australia's social media ban, but Lisa Nandy's indicated the UK has no plans to impose similar restrictions. President Zelensky's indicated Ukraine could hold elections within 90 days. It follows Donald Trump's sharp criticism of Europe and claim that Kiev is using the war as an excuse to put off a vote. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but the storm still being felt in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
Proposed takeover of Warner Brothers by either Netflix or by Paramount. It is the most consequential business deal that you could possibly imagine, shaping our cultural lives. But why is Donald Trump at the middle of it?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different, should be fun. All wobbly, all wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirements for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need, to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:32 is the time. So we're talking about this grooming gang inquiry and the problems that we've had at Offset. There's an LBC, as it starts off, there's an LBC exclusive as well on this theme. So LBC can reveal that two women who grew up in care homes in London made complaints about a Metropolitan Police officer within months of each other back in 2012. Here with the details, LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes. Andy, what you got? Morning.
Morning, Nick. This story begins in West London in a custody suite in 2012 when a woman was arrested for a minor offence. She was taken to a police station where she immediately recognised the custody sergeant behind the desk as someone who had abused her as a child. This senior detective who investigated grooming cases was made aware of the claim at the time. He asked that we protect his identity.
This lady had been arrested recently. When she went into the custody area, she was shocked to see who the custody officer was. This lady had been in care as a child, and they used to run away from care, come into London. And she said that same officer used to pick her up with other girls sometimes, take her to an address in London where he and several other powerful men would sexually abuse them. And she didn't have any names of these men, but she thought one was a judge. And she just couldn't believe that it was still in the police.
We are not naming the custody sergeant for legal reasons at this stage, but during our investigation, we learned that an unnamed MP and a judge were also accused of being part of a paedophile ring, and that a second victim had made identical accusations about the same officer. Ruth Bush is a Westminster councillor who sat with the victim during police interviews.
She had been sexually abused as a child by a number of people, but particularly by somebody she would always just refer to as and they were all about eight, little tiny children, and she said they only picked the pretty ones. But it was undoubtedly connected to her experiences with in the police station. Certainly bad physical, sexual abuse was perpetrated on her and on the others.
Do you know if the police officers who were interviewing her, did they give any indication that they believed her or not?
They did.
Now, despite being believed, the case was dropped because of a lack of evidence a year later, and the accused officer has been allowed to retire whilst under investigation, leading to claims of a cover-up.
Within a month, I was told he'd retired. At that point, you could not retire if you had an outstanding complaint against you. You couldn't resign and you couldn't retire. So I just thought they'd push under the carpet. Nothing's been done. I would have gone to his house and arrested him. I would have searched everything, seized all his electronics, brought him in, interviewed him, and he would have been released on bail. There's no way he, a month later, should have been just allowed to retire. Whoever made those decisions should be dealt with. They've taken the easy option. They've closed it down. But he needs to be prosecuted.
Do you think this is a cover-up?
Yes.
At the time, in 2012, officers under a criminal investigation could only retire with permission from a senior officer. The Met was unable to tell us who had made this decision. LBC found that the accused former officer was now living in the north of England, and I approached him to put the allegations to him.
Hi, my name's Andy Hughes. I'm a reporter for LBC. Is it okay if we chat about some allegations? Here's a letter which details the allegations. The allegations relate to your time at the Met Police. And the allegations are that you sexually abused young girls when you were at the Met Police. Do you have any comments to that? Can you take this letter? All the details, Miss, all the details are detailed in this letter. It's got my contact details on, and you can respond to that. There's time to respond.
That rustling you hear is me posting that letter detailing the allegations through his door. That was 2 weeks ago. So this former officer later contacted LBC, and in a statement he said, "I categorically deny the accusations." However, the Met says it is now reviewing the case in light of our investigation and urge anyone with more information to come forward. And the big question for the Met this morning, Nick, is who authorised and signed off this officer's retirement while he was under investigation for such a senior offence. In normal forces, this could go up to chief constable level. In the Met, potentially could go up to commissioner or one of their deputies.
And all we can say is this happened in 2012. We can't give out any more details at this time, unfortunately, to help try and anyone who might have any more information. It's all very well the Met saying, please give us more information, but all we can actually nail on is this was happening in 2012. It's all we can give them.
In 2012, currently. Yes, indeed, and that he was a custody sergeant who worked in West London.
All right, that's as much as you can do. Well done. Now, you can see footage of Andy's investigation on lbc.co.uk and the LBC app as well. It occurs to me, Andy, we'll have a conversation off air, but maybe some of this needs to go to this grooming gang inquiry as well.
Well, indeed. The timing is interesting, isn't it? And I'm sure Baroness Longfield may look into this.
All right, Andy Hughes, with that exclusive report, and I assure you, Andy and I share the frustration that we can't give you more, but we have to respect a legal position until possibly we find a way through. Andy, thanks for that. Let's turn to Chris Wilde, author and campaigner in this area, spent 10 years working in London's care system. Thanks for coming on the line. Your immediate response to the report that's just been filed by Andy. Morning to you.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Thank you so much. Yeah, horrifying. Absolutely horrifying, Nick. And we've spoken before about this, and it just seems to me that we, especially with children in care in particular, I'm not sure where this girl, which background she came from, but it seems to me that this has become the norm. We've normalized these conversations. I've witnessed this since I left care in 1991, and 28 years later, I'm still hearing reports like this from Andy. It's absolutely horrific and horrifying.
Can we broaden the conversation out? We're talking the day after the grooming gang inquiry has actually been set in train, but already survivors are questioning the chair and other aspects. Your take on it?
Yeah, well, I worked with Anne for many years. I worked with Anne when she was the Children's Commissioner. I think she's the right... Yes, Baroness Longfield, apologies. Yep. She's incredibly passionate about the care system, about her work, and I think it's the right decision. I think Anne will left no stone unturned, and I welcome the news yesterday. I think she'll do a great job, Nick.
So the suggestions that as she's a Labour peer, she might not go after some of them because most of these took place in Labour-run local authorities. Do you think that's unjust?
Yeah, it's unjust. I think she can't really hide that anymore. I think with the report from the Casey report and Louise Casey's report, I think, you know, there's enough evidence to say, but you can't, you know, you can't use that as an excuse. She has to go out there and do what's right and get justice for all these vulnerable adults and children who are suffering.
Chris, what does justice look like then for those victims, survivors?
I think, you know, for me personally, justice is... We want a right law in place that protects vulnerable children, vulnerable young people from being exposed to this kind of abuse. And it stems right back to the government's decision to extend corporate parenting. Who can actually protect young people at the moment? It's just the local authority. But this new legislation going through Parliament will make it law that everybody's responsible. We're all accountable. We've all got to make sure that children, young people are protected, regardless if you're an MP, politician, decision maker. It's not our responsibility, Nick. You know, we're going to lose a generation of young people because we're so good at just kind of turning a blind eye. And I'm not saying that's everyone in general, but politics has got in the way of this and people are just suffering. And I think because of social media and everything which is happening now, you can't really kind of hide from this. You can't turn a blind eye. You've got to expose. You've got to talk about it. And these victims have a platform, and that's the power. That's the movement. They're speaking up and speaking out, and they've had enough, and rightly so.
Chris Wilde, thank you. Author and campaigner, you spent 10 years working in London's care system. You've been chronicling these events for some time. Let's get to your reactions. Sam Williams-Thomas in Surrey says, I want to know why the London mayor never answers when asked if London had grooming gangs, or when asked anything related to it. He just starts speaking loads of words which have no relation to the question asked. How can these poor women and men have support in this area when the London mayor doesn't answer the questions? Well, of course, that speaks to the story that we've just played to you, or just given you by my colleague Andy Hughes. Michael's in Twickenham on this. Michael, let's talk about the grooming gang inquiry. It needs to work. It needs to deliver. How happy are you with its makeup? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great to speak to you. I totally agree with everything you say, as always. I don't think we're going to get to the bottom of all of this. I think it should be totally independent. You know, this Baroness who stepped down yesterday... you know, she may do a great job. We don't know.
She stepped down as a Labour peer, just to clarify.
Stepped down as a Labour peer.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But I think you're right. We should have a retired judge or you know, two or three different people from different fields.
Well, you see, I thought that, but then I was just listening to Andy's report about what went on with that former Met officer, and the young woman said she was taken somewhere where there were other powerful men, including a retired judge and an MP. So now I think, oh dear God, we can't put a damn judge in there because I'm not suggesting a court, but how can we have confidence in that?
Well, I mean, Yeah, I mean, you've got a good point there, but I just think there's questions being asked, and since the Prime Minister didn't want this inquiry to start with, and he's had to be dragged, you know, with his...
How embarrassing is that for him, Michael? Because I just get the quote out again. All politicians who are calling for inquiries are jumping on the far-right bandwagon. That was what...
I think that's quite disrespectful, you know, to the lot of the general public, because lots of the general public may have some, you know, not far-right views.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a bit disrespectful to you know, say that about the public. Yeah, I think he didn't want this inquiry.
No. And lastly, to an earlier point made by Neil on an email, no surprise that it's projected to last 3 years, because just play the ball into the long grass a little bit longer, and guess what? We get to another general election, and we don't expose dozens of Labour-run authorities as allowing this to go on. Michael?
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point, because a lot of these are Labour-run. Not all of them, but a lot of them were Labour-run authorities.
Yeah.
They're worried about this being exposed.
Yeah.
But the public have spoken, and they've had to go along with it now.
They have, including the Prime Minister and the then Home Secretary, of course, who's been dragged along, having initially said that they didn't need them. Michael, thanks for your input. Have a safe day down in Twickenham. Chris in Manchester, this is deeper than we think. The cover-ups that have gone on are going on are very concerning. Isn't this why the investigation is being put off for years? How can we trust the government and the people who are running our country with all this going on? Well, on this one, I really don't know, because the news that's in that LBC exclusive you heard about 10 minutes ago involved a former judge, that really does give you cause for concern. But again, for some reason, you don't find it that surprising. Mick in South Devon. There's only one person to chair this inquiry, that's Maggie Oliver. Maggie Oliver, of course, is a retired GMP, Greater Manchester Police detective. All I would say, and I'm a massive fan of Ms. Oliver's work, and I've had the privilege of speaking with her on this show, gosh, probably, certainly, probably half a dozen times, I would think, and she's tremendous. But she might be, if you're respecting, like, a little bit at one side. Mick goes on, any inquiry should have the power to subpoena anyone they think contributed to this cover-up, including social workers, council staff, MPs, members of the constabulary, and put them before the courts and, if necessary, in prison. I think we'd all agree with that, wouldn't we? All right, coming up later in the show, I'm sure people now, you know, have had this flu, which seems to be sweeping the country. Go and get your jab, particularly if you're elderly or vulnerable. Now there is a suggestion, possibly even urging, actually, from senior members of the NHS, we should go back to the bad old days of COVID and start wearing masks. A view here from leader of His Majesty's Opposition, Conservative, Kimmy Badenoch.
I personally think that face coverings can be a barrier to social interaction, social cohesion. I do worry about a mask mandate. I don't think government should be mandating anything.
There's more on that in the next hour. It's 8:45, LBC News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister's urged fellow European leaders to go further on changing the ECHR to help tackle illegal migration. President Zelensky's indicated Ukraine could hold elections within 90 days, and the Culture Secretary's told Nick that ministers are keeping a close eye on Australia's social media ban, but the UK has no plans to impose similar restrictions. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but staying blustery in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. It's because of the emergency repair works. One lane has been closed again, and it's slow all the way back to Junction 14 at Milton Keynes. Very busy on the M20 westbound up to Junction 7 at Detling Hill, and that's after an accident. Also, delays continue in Chertsey on the Guildford Road in both directions to the Ottershaw roundabout. There's been an accident and one lane is closed. Severe delays on the Elizabeth line, and also severe delays on the Piccadilly line, and that's between Acton Town and Uxbridge. Minor delays on the Lioness line, and minor delays on the District and Hammersmith and City lines.
LBC.
Turkey tummy.
Fizzy reflux.
Sprouts. Gastric trouble can feel like the festive gift that keeps on giving. At the first sign of discomfort, think Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea,
heartburn,
Pepto-Bismol coats and soothes your stomach for effective five-symptom relief. Pepto-Bismol oral suspension contains bismuth subsalicylate. Always read the label.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
What makes the best roast dinner is deeply personal. And we've all got strong opinions on whether it's best with beef or chicken.
roasties or mash, and if cauliflower cheese really belongs. It doesn't, by the way. But one thing isn't up for debate. A roast is always better with deliciously crispy, fluffy Paxo stuffing. Mmm. A roast isn't a roast without Paxo, the original stuffing, lovingly crafted since 1901.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curve leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things like the upcoming changes to renting are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. These changes will affect how you manage your tenancies. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:49. Let's talk more about our children, and I appreciate grooming gang conversation about our children, but perhaps in a more wholesome fashion. And these two ideas. Firstly, the one that we heard in the first hour of the show, which is this idea, Youth Matters. Half a billion pounds, £500 million, to launch what they hope will be, and again, this is not in a derogatory fashion at all, a string of youth clubs. It is almost like going back to the future. Already the first 8 hubs will be operational by March of next year. They've been identified in Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester, County, Durham, Bristol, Tower Hamlets, Brighton, Hove and Nottingham. We heard that one was launched yesterday in Peckham, which is in South London. And it is everything there, from dance to drama to, yes, you've got it, to table tennis. This, as it has been discovered, that there is a record number of young people, this is 11 and above, by the way, 11 up to their late teens, feeling isolation crisis and not having any senior person or adult in their life to whom they can relate. Isn't that terrible? So, again, I don't have children in my life who are 11, or 11 through 18, or whatever it might be. But the fact they live their lives on the iPhone, and it is quite telling, one of the first things that the Lisa Nandy, the Culture Secretary, referenced was, this is the first review of its kind since the invention of the iPhone. And while it is, particularly for adults, I mean, I use the damn thing all the time, it's extraordinary. It's not healthy to give it to an 11-year-old child, is it? And then you wonder why he or she perhaps becomes a little detached, a little disengaged. You can hardly be surprised at that. So there's this idea. And that plays directly into what they're doing down in Australia, as you've heard on the LBC News Bulletin, and I spoke again to Lisa Nandy about. And they said, which is probably not a bad idea for the British government, actually, to monitor, not to say, yes, we're going to do it, and not to say, no, we'd never do it. Let's just monitor it. Where accounts held by users under 16 will be removed on apps such as TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Reddit, Kick and many others. It is a world first down in Australia, the ban on social media for users aged under 16, causing millions of children and teenagers to lose access to their accounts. Now, we won't really know how that goes on, because it only came in yesterday. But you can say at least this a government is trying to take action there. So would you be supportive of what they're trying to do in Australia? And can I take you back to your days, if you're of a certain age? Did you go to a youth club? And is it just playing table tennis and whatever else it might be? I don't know, the lad's doing a bit of boxing. I've no idea. I've never been to you. I never went to you. Never did. Because I grew up on a bit of land. I was out shearing sheep and stuff like that. We never really had time for that. I was delivering hay or driving a Land Rover at 14. On the fields, not on the roads. So it's very different. I'll talk a little bit about the aspect and what they might have achieved for you. But it's grooming gangs that is dominating our conversation. Chris is in Manchester. I think you certainly said, Chris, it's this idea of how long it will take, isn't it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Are you concerned, duration, 3 years?
Yes, it just seems, they seem to be putting it off, don't they? I mean, we've got to protect our children. We've got to understand what's going on here. And it's very concerning the fact that, you know, it's taken this time. It's, we're being labelled as far right just for wanting an inquiry. It's just bizarre. And quite frankly, really concerning. As a father, it's not really something that should be happening. It should be investigated straight away.
What, do you have daughters, teenage daughters, Chris?
Yeah, I've got a daughter and a son, yeah.
Mm. So this really does knock on your door, doesn't it? Because you want, obviously, greater protection for your children, but particularly for your daughter in issues such as these.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it's just bizarre how you can be, how the Prime Minister can label the inquiry as far right if you want him. How do you trust these people, Nick?
How embarrassing was it that now something that was jumping on the far-right bandwagon, I think because virtually all the local authorities involved are Labour-run, he's now had to completely U-turn on that?
Exactly. And it just goes to show, doesn't it, that they're now saying potentially the inquiry won't be finished till after they potentially remove from government, because that's the way we're heading realistically, aren't we?
What, you think they'll get biffed out?
Yeah, 100%. I just can't see how we can continue with this government.
Chris, thank you. And we'll stay with conversations about our young people, because I referenced earlier what they're trying in Australia. And here is the country's Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, saying families are taking back control on the first day of that social media ban.
This is world-leading. This is Australia showing enough is enough. And the world, including through, I note, some leading media global organisations who are here, just to confirm, is watching and is following. But Australia is leading. And it's leading not because of actions of my government. It is leading because of some of the heroes who are behind me and who are joining us here today. Australians who've lost a son or a daughter. Australians who have seen the direct impact of social media causing social harm.
So a lot of reference, understandably, to Australia and Australians, but would we ever see a similar ban in the United Kingdom? A question I put to the Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, in the first hour.
We're following it really closely, but in this National Youth Strategy, we heard from over 14,000 young people in this country, and we very specifically talked to them about their experiences of social media. They were really concerned that if you introduced a blanket ban, not only would it be very difficult to make that work, it might push young people into other parts of the internet that are unregulated. What they wanted most of all was adults who could support them and help them to navigate this. Girls in particular told us that they were really concerned that if people couldn't see what was wrong with what was happening online, they wouldn't be able to see what was wrong with that same sort of behaviour in the real world. And that's what we're addressing with the first National Youth Strategy in over two decades.
So how has it gone down under? Let's go to Amy Remikis, who's Chief Political Analyst at the Australia Institute, contributing editor at The New Daily, joining us from Canberra. What has been the immediate reaction from young people? And indeed, how has the media portrayed this, Amy? Morning to you.
Good morning. Yeah, so for young people, it is definitely not positive. So we've already seen young people work out ways to get around this ban. VPN has been one of the most trending search terms in Australia for the last 48 hours, as young people are working out how they can mask their ISP address so that they can get around the social media ban. We've also seen, in terms of like what apps are becoming really popular in Australia in the last 48 hours, it's all of these unregulated third-party apps that do not fall under the ban. We've also seen a return to, I suppose, OG social media in terms of AOL chat rooms and people flocking back to Roblox and things like that for the chat functions, all to fulfill that sense of social media community. These are not regulated by our social media ban, which has been one of the key concerns, not just young people, but also experts in this field have raised about this government policy, and that it's just going to push kids into unregulated parts of the internet where adults don't necessarily know what's going on.
Which is what our culture secretary, our politician, said. Amy, you're the chief political analyst at the Australia Institute. How brave is this? Because these young people in 2 years, in for some instances, will get the vote, and I remind my listeners in Australia, you have to vote. There could be a whirlwind to inherit through this.
Yeah, Potentially, but not necessarily. We do already see, in terms of the demographics in Australia, that millennials and Gen Z have recently overtaken boomers as the highest voting bloc in Australia, just on the numbers. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to see too much of a change of those 16-year-olds or 15-year-olds now in a couple of years coming in to vote and even remembering that they were angry about this. In terms of the actual bravery of it, it's actually quite a populist policy. It started as FM radio campaigns, which were then picked up by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp and really pushed through those popular media lines. And despite the fact that 90% of experts in Australia have been saying this will not work, it was very popular with parents, to the point where Labor ended up echoing our opposition at the last election to say that they would make this policy if they won. It was one of the only unity tickets because it was seen as such a populist policy.
Amy, have yourself, I was going to say, a good day. Have a good evening. Amy Romikis, thank you. Chief Political Analyst at the Australia Institute, contributing editor at the New Daily, talking to us from Canberra, 2 to 9. Let's come back to events here in the UK and the idea. It's related, how we look after young people and the return of the youth clubs. George is in Charlton. Good news, George? Morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Not very good news for me, I'm afraid. I've bought a local one, and I'm a young sort of recently separated, so I'm single dad, and
I've got two
small kids,
yeah.
12 and 10. They were younger at the time, and I took them to the local one so that they could try and make friends in the area and sort of get integrated a little bit because they spent 50% of the time with me. I took them there, and they were scared by...
What scared them, George?
It was the gang attitude of a lot of the kids. I got there, the first thing that I saw, even before I walked into the building, was a bunch of them smoking outside.
How old?
I would say that they were like between 16 and 18.
Right.
And my kids were 9 and 11 at the time. And so I took them in my kids in there, said, okay, let's go and have a look. They had a TV, they had a PlayStation, I believe, and a ping pong table.
Right.
And nobody, it was a racket in there, nobody seemed to be in charge. And
what have you decided to do about your children's future involvement? You're going to do it or not?
I will not. No. I don't feel that they are safe. And Nick, it's as I said, it's just around the corner from me. I go past there on a regular basis.
I'm sorry, that's not working, George. Good luck. I'm very sorry to hear that you've parted from your partner and the mother of your children. I hope that works out well. Best wishes to you and, of course, your children. But the music means we must move on. And coming up after the news, is it time now to return to those COVID-style masks? Well, many in the NHS think so. Here's Chief Executive of NHS Providers, Daniel Elkalis.
You must wear a mask when you're in public spaces, including on public transport, to stop the chances of you giving your virus to somebody else.
You ready to dust off those masks from those COVID days? Plus, also in the next hour, it is now discovered the Home Office has no idea how many asylum seekers have gone missing since arriving in this country. That gives us full confidence, doesn't it? Plus... happy birthday, Coronation Street, but at 65 years old, is it time to pension it off? News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the UK is to push for reforms to the European Convention on Human Rights at a major summit. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, will call for changes to make it easier to tackle illegal migration at the talks in Strasbourg. Critics of the ECHR say it's blocking deportations of failed asylum seekers. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, ruled out leaving the convention, speaking to MPs last month.
This government will not come out of the European Convention on Human Rights. What we are going to do is reform the way that Article 8 in particular is applied to immigration rules within our country. That is because this government rolls up his sleeves and does the actual hard work of governing, unlike his party, which just gave up altogether.
A National Audit Office report has blamed short-term reactive policies for failures in the asylum system. The watchdog looked at 5,000 asylum cases lodged 3 years ago and found 56% remained unresolved. LBC has found a former Metropolitan Police officer accused of being involved in a grooming gang was allowed to retire under investigation. Two women who grew up in care made allegations against the custody sergeant in 2012, but the case was dropped because of a lack of evidence. A former senior detective has told us they believe it was brushed under the carpet. We've changed their voice to protect their identity.
Within a month, I was told he'd retired. At that point, you could not retire if you had an outstanding complaint against you. You couldn't resign and you couldn't retire. So I just thought they'd push it under the carpet. Nothing's been done.
The Met says it's reviewing the case and has encouraged anyone with information to come forward. President Zelensky's asked allies for security guarantees so Ukraine can hold elections. He's suggested a ballot could take place within 90 days. It follows Donald Trump's sharp criticism of European leaders and claim Kiev is using the war as an excuse to put off a vote. Warnings for strong winds are in place as northern Scotland continues to feel the effects of Storm Bram. There could be gusts of up to 90 miles per hour in places with ongoing travel disruption expected. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 96.48. That's up six. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but blustery without breaks of rain, particularly in northern Scotland, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This Christmas at Tesco, get selected meat joints and boneless salmon sides better than half price with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland. Beef and lamb ends 28th of the 12th, pork 6th of the 1st, gammon 13th of the 1st, salmon 1st of the 1st, Club card required.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after nine, Wednesday the 10th of December. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch on the attacks. The NHS suggestion to wear face masks is simply wrong. Are you ready to dust off those masks, go back to those grim days of COVID? And was it ever scientifically proven that they were helping in any way, shape or form? Plus, and I know I have, not least as I spent most of my day yesterday stuck in a car in central London, courtesy of Mayor Khan's stewardship of the roads. So many people you do see now walking the streets in masks. Or is that just London? Are we early adopters? Or is it happening across the whole of the country? I'll take your calls on that. Plus, shocking admission. We have absolutely no idea, or the Home Office has no idea, how many asylum seekers have gone missing since arriving in this country. This comes at the same time as two newspapers decide to do fact files on just how much crime is being committed by illegal asylum seekers in this country. Some of the most grave crimes imaginable. Manslaughter and sexual offences. And to change the mood at the end of the show, happy birthday to Coronation Street. Today was the day it was launched. Yesterday, the reviews came in today. It was launched last night. 65 years ago, the initial reviews were less than favourable, but it has powered on. There are more than, I think, 11,700 episodes. And there have been some key moments. Cars crashing into the drink. I think there was a train crash. Oh, and let's not forget this.
You're not going anywhere!
No, why? You scared I might kill myself?
Frankly, yes!
Are you a blood or care?
I did it because I love you!
I hate you!
And there's poor old Gail Platt taking a tumble down the stairs during an argument in 2008. Do you remember one plotline even gave the Prime Minister free Deirdre? Do you remember that? But as the numbers have gone from 22 million to just 4, which I know in today's TV terms is still mega, at 65, is it time to pension it off? Or are you going to ring me and say, I'm in my 30s and I love Corrie?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The last of which of those lines is the complete opposite of what you should do on these sort of jobs, which is to encourage people to ring in. I don't think anyone is going to ring me below the age of 40 and say, I watch Coronation Street. I'm not saying it's not great. I never got it. I used to have to watch it for my job because I was a show business report, TV reporter on The Sun. I never understood it then. I did enough stories about it. I had to chase Len Fairclough across Bali. But that's another conversation for later in the hour. Let's go to other matters. Do you remember those masks during COVID? Was it ever scientifically nailed down and proven that they made a difference. I ask because what we can accept as fact, without doubt we can accept as fact, is we are staring in the teeth of an RC flu outbreak, widespread. Can I use the word epidemic? I don't know. I'm not a medical expert. But I do know that I've had my jab. And you should too. Your arm hurts for a little bit and it's done. Move on. Because if we don't, we're going to get it even worse. But there's a bit of political involvement now. Comments made by Chief Executive of NHS Providers, Daniel Elkeleys.
The thing about a tidal wave is this is a very big tidal wave. It's a very nasty variant of flu that we have this year. And it's much earlier in the winter season than normal. So children are still at school. I think we need to get back into the habit that if you are coughing and sneezing, but you're not unwell enough to not go to work, then you must wear a mask when you're in public spaces, including on public transport, to stop the chances of you giving your virus to somebody else.
Schools are closing. Children are being told not to sing in assembly and to wear... When have you heard this before? Yeah, that's right. And to wear masks. So what is the view of a senior politician, Conservative, Kemi Badenoch?
I'm still slightly traumatised by all the mask wearing that we had to do during COVID. Look, you know, let's bring some common sense into this. I personally think that face coverings can be a barrier to social interaction, social cohesion, and I do worry about a mask mandate. I don't think government should be mandating anything. Let's have some common sense. I think people can make up their own minds. If you are really sick, you should be in bed. You should not be on public transport. I think that's more of a problem. But the truth is, many people are contagious before they realise that they're even ill. So I'm not sure that it would work. I think it's a surprising announcement. I'm not quite sure why they've done that.
To Stephen Dorrell, who served as a Conservative Health Secretary, chaired the Health Select Committee, chaired the NHS Confederation, and is now a Liberal Democrat, but uniquely positioned to answer this on a number of levels. And first, let's, if I may, start with you and what we heard from Kemi Badenoch yesterday. She feels traumatised and we need to take a more common sense approach. The NHS, or at least one member of the NHS, is saying, get those masks on. Where are you, Mr. Dorrell? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. And I'm more in favour of people wearing masks when they know they've got germs. Because I think it's about being a responsible citizen. We've all been victims in the past of people who are spewing germs all over the workplace, all over public transport, and believing themselves to be heroes because they keep going despite the fact they're ill. I don't think those people are heroes. I think particularly at a time when we know hospitals are even fuller than usual at this time of year with flu victims, that it's important to be responsible in the sense of thinking about the impact of your own actions on the people around you. And that, it seems to me, is part of being a responsible citizen. I noticed Kemi Badenoch was quite careful, actually, not to say yes or no when asked this question. She was trying to play both sides, I think, in a sort of typically political way. But what we, I think, should urge is that people should think about the impact of what they do on the people around them.
One politician who wasn't attempting to ride two horses is former Conservative Cabinet Minister Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, who served indeed during the pandemic. And Moggy says, as the evidence for face masks was pretty dodgy last time, why would anyone believe them now? Mr. Dorrell.
Well, you said...
You've got to love Moggy.
He's always good for a quote, isn't he? He's quite often on a high horse, usually going in the wrong direction.
You think they should be one. What about the idea of trauma? If you go back to the days, how comfortable did you find it to wear them? Is there an argument that in many instances, perhaps, there was a social damage done?
I think that's overplayed, to be honest. I certainly didn't consider myself to be traumatised. I think what is true is that when you're out in the out and about, you're not suffering from any germs. There was a sense that everybody was having to wear masks when there was no obvious reason for doing so. But if you have germs or if you're in a crowded place, I think it's an individual decision. I'm not in favour of legal obligations here. But I think we should start from the principle, think about the people around you. In a free society, it's not just what I want, it's the contribution I make to the society in which I live.
Lastly, talking of contributions, really with your political hat on, we're days away from a resident, once known as Junior, resident doctor's strike. Given what appears to be, and I don't know what actually an epidemic constitutes, so I don't know whether we've just got a massive outbreak or an epidemic, but given these waves of flu sweeping the country, should they be reviewing their decision over industrial action?
Well, I think they should be reviewing their decision over industrial action quite independently of the flu epidemic, frankly. I think the reality is here that the BMA was put at the front of the queue in pay terms by the government soon after its election and is now wanting to go back to the front of the queue, despite the fact that other people haven't had remotely the kind of increase that they've had.
Stephen Doyle served as Conservative Health Secretary. You chaired the Health Select Committee and you chaired the NHS Confederation. You're now a Liberal Democrat, and thank you for your input. Listening, Dr. Raj Passeau, who's consultant psychiatrist and broadcaster, and perhaps I can with you, Dr. explore what we'd heard from Mrs. Badenoch, and I quote, "I'm still slightly traumatised by all the mask wearing that we had to do during COVID. Let's bring some common sense into this. I personally think that face coverings can be a barrier to social interaction, social cohesion, and I worry about a mask mandate." Do you think they cause trauma? Are they a barrier to social cohesion? Doctor, morning.
Well, I think trauma is a very overused word, but I do think that she is right that actually masks do have a psychological impact for all sorts of reasons. But there's another psychological element here. We know from the lockdown inquiry that a lot of decisions were made in haste and, dare I say, in panic, and they were bad decisions, and they, you know, destroyed society. So with flu spreading, people feel a need to do something. Well, do something sensible. Don't do something out of panic. Viruses are very, very small particles, and most cheap masks probably don't work. They're just having a psychological effect in that you think they're working. And by the way, because you think they're working, you then go closer to people than you would otherwise if you weren't wearing a mask. In other words, if you weren't wearing a mask and stayed away from people, you're probably doing a better job of stopping viruses getting to them than wearing a very poorly made mask that lets the virus through anyway, that makes you feel safe. But then you go close to people and actually you're exposing them to more danger than if you were more cautious and weren't wearing a mask. I hope that makes sense as an argument.
Raj, you mentioned the word panic. How much does mask wearing contribute to almost herd mentality? As in, I walk down the high street and I see the lady wearing one and the man riding a bicycle and I think, oh my God, I better dig out my masks again.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. You're a very good amateur psychologist. There's a big conformity pressure on people to feel, if you walk into a tube carriage and everyone's wearing a mask and you're not, you feel ostracized psychologically and you feel maybe you should go and wear one, whether you think it's a good idea or not. There is one final argument, you're not going to like this, that's actually in favour of mask wearing, and it is psychological. Mm. And the research evidence is, and I'm not saying this just because I'm talking to you, Nick, I don't want you to take this personally, but if you wear a mask, you look more attractive because you hide most of the face.
Raj, I've known you long enough to take no offence. Look after yourself. Dr. Raj Passeau, consultant psychiatrist and broadcaster. Taking your calls on that, just to lift the mood, because listen, as we talked about grooming games, we had that powerful LBC exclusive. There are young people watching Corrie. Hi, my name's James. I'm 30 years old. I watch Corrie every day and I love it. I started watching it at 15 with my mother. We've never missed an episode. Ring in. I might test you on that. It's 65, but it was 65 year old. The reviews were 65 years ago today. And I'm trying to find younger viewers. I might be on track. 9:15 now, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Britain is to push for reforms to the European Convention on Human Rights at a major summit. LBC has found a former police officer accused of being involved in a grooming gang was allowed to retire under investigation. And President Zelensky has asked allies for security guarantees so Ukraine can hold elections. LBC weather brighter for most places, but the storm still causing some issues in northern Scotland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M1 southbound from Junction 14 at Milton Keynes to 12 at Flitwick. Those emergency repair works are taking place and one lane is closed. Also very busy on the Euston Road going eastbound to Euston train station, and that's where a car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. Now, these problems on the trains do continue. The Elizabeth line is suffering with severe delays. Also, South Eastern are delayed to and from Charing Cross, and also problems for Thames Link. They're disrupted between St Pancras and Finsbury Park, and that's following a signal failure. On the Underground, the Piccadilly line's back up and running now between Acton Town and Uxbridge, but with delays.
This is LBC.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes,
or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
There's an old Thai saying that roughly translates as, the family who takes the internet on holiday can locate a less crowded beach. Particularly handy, my friend, if it's peak mating season for nippy little crabs. Pack the internet with an eSIM from Aerolo. That's A-I-R-A-L-O.
They did it again. Flour instead of flowers. On my birthday. I'm 95 minutes late. But it's hard to leave when you've shared so much. Your postcode, your gluten intolerance. Then I saw it. 25% off your first Ocado shop. Plus, free delivery. And I just knew I'd found the online supermarket of my dreams. Ocado. Life delivered. Geographical restrictions. Min spend £60. Max saving £20. Charges and Christmas restrictions apply. New customers only. Terms at Ocado.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up Martin. You're going to be the first caller on this. Davey says, Kemi Badenoch traumatised by wearing a mask. How does that fit with her tough persona she likes to put out there? Similar theme here from Alan. What a load of nonsense. Traumatised by wearing a mask. For a few weeks, 5 years ago, my parents lived through a 6-year war, were evacuated from their home and parents, at the end of which they brushed themselves down, got on with celebrating and enjoying their lives. Why have we become a nation of wimps? Martin in Rotherhithe. Did you wear a mask back in COVID days? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. How are you?
Oh, good, thank you. Well, I think I'm all right because I've had the jab, hopefully. Did you wear a mask during COVID days?
During the pandemic, initially I did, but towards the end I didn't because the more evidence came into the media that they didn't work. And I just thought, you know, and surprise, surprise, we've got, you know, to winter again and the face mask fanatics are out in force, scaremongering. You know, you must wear a mask, it'll cure everything. You know, and I fear we're going down that direction again now.
Respond to this text that has just come in. Lee in Battersea. Simple test. Do masks work? Cough or sneeze on a mirror without a mask, then do the same with a mask. See the difference. He's onto something there, isn't he?
No, and I'll give you another example.
Respectfully, he is.
Well, I'll give you another one, Nick.
Go on.
I was sat on the tube train last winter.
Yeah.
I was sat on the tube train last winter. A guy next to me was wearing one of those blue paper masks.
Yes.
I could smell his bad breath. And do you want to know how I could tell that, Nick? Because every time he breathed, it was coming out of the side of his mask.
Ah.
So there's your evidence.
Right. So nothing's going to persuade you to put on that mask?
No, absolutely not.
Have you had it yet? This flu bug?
Do you know, a couple of years ago, I did have flu, and it was nasty. I will admit that. And if you're elderly, you absolutely should get the the flu vaccine.
Yeah, yeah.
And even small children can get the flu jab, so I recommend that. But, you know, we need to stop with some of the hysteria. You know, be sensible. If you're not feeling well, don't go and visit your elderly parents. You know, simple things like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with that. Martin, look after yourself. Be safe. Thank you. I've only ever had flu once. And this idea, I can't come in today, I've got flu. You can't get out of it. You can't even lift the phone if you've really got flu. It is brutal, which is why I get the flu jab, because I'm old and vulnerable. Well, one of the two. So I'm deemed anyway, that's the point, that's the reality of it all. But if you've actually got it, it wipes you out. And I'm afraid you're all furious with me, but I did come to work, dosed myself up. I don't know, it's just the way I'm bred, nothing I can do. Anne's in Kenilworth, you're on the radio, Anne. Good morning.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
You're going to wear a mask?
Yeah, I will, yeah. I just wanted to pick up on something your previous caller said. The odour molecules are tiny. They are 100 to 1,000 times smaller than viral particles. So that is why you can smell things, but it doesn't mean the mask is not going to be
Are you
tracking viral molecules.
Are you in this field?
I know quite a lot about masks because I was very, very badly affected by a COVID infection in 2021. And then I educated myself and found out about how to protect myself. And the reason that people think that masks don't work is because the public health messaging about face masks has been so poor. Some face masks aren't very effective. The ones that are being worn in NHS hospitals are not very effective. They are fluid-resistant masks. They help against droplet transmission. But we are not protecting ourselves against airborne transmission. And that is why people think they're not effective. We're not wearing the right masks. And if the public health organisation gave out the correct information to the public about how to protect themselves, then we would not be having stupid comments like your previous caller and saying that there's dodgy evidence about masks.
Why?
There is evidence that effective face masks that protect you against airborne transmission will stop you from being infected with airborne diseases, including COVID. And I just want to pick up on the fact that you keep saying back in COVID days, during COVID. COVID is still circulating at high levels. And we've just recently had a massive COVID wave. So the pandemic it wasn't declared over. It is ongoing. And I know that that goes against
How do you know this?
How do I know what?
All the information you just put forward.
Because I've done my research through...
Well, other people would say they've done
their... Because I've had to.
But other people would say they've done their research. I didn't know whether you were going to say that you're a biological student or whatever it might be.
No, but, I mean, well, the person that was just on the phone just a minute ago, I'm sure he would say that he's done his research, but he says he's got all his information from the media.
But that's the very point I'm making. Do you see what I'm saying? You say, well, I've done my research.
Yeah, and the point...
Well, someone else could now ring and say, well, I've done my research, and it was proven they had absolutely no effect.
And I agree.
Sorry, go ahead.
I agree with you, but the point is that it's the public health agencies that are letting us down. And the reason that we're being let down, and it's not just about the information going out to the general public, we're also talking about the staff and patients who are going and accessing healthcare. So the infection protection and control guidelines in the NHS still don't acknowledge airborne transmission of flu and COVID. And so we still have staff in the NHS and patients who are being given these ineffective blue paper masks as protection against an airborne disease.
Why do you think, lastly, why do you think, if you're right, the education has been so poor on this, Anne?
Well, I would say that if the NHS, so we've seen it in the COVID inquiry over the previous months, that we had the head of infection protection and control denying airborne transmission at the COVID inquiry. The reason that she was sitting and denying airborne transmission is because if they acknowledge that they have thus far not been protecting staff and patients, that would open themselves up to retrospective litigation because they have not been protecting staff and patients. And moving forward, they would have to invest and actually give the funding and the air filters and everything. They would need to, if they acknowledge airborne transmission, then they're going to have to spend some money and actually protect people.
Must leave it there to get others involved. Anne, thanks for all your background. If you agree, do get involved. If you don't, do give me a call. Hayley's in Matlock. Hayley, are you ready to start wearing masks again because of the flu?
I'd be quite happy to wear a mask if they are proven to be effective. But the point I wanted to make...
Well, we just heard from Anne, they are.
Yeah.
You're still slightly doubtful. You're slightly dubious, are you still?
Well, I'm only dubious because I think, honestly, what I'd like to see is also a much stronger campaign about hand washing and people getting a flu jab. This is coming across like the mask is the answer, and there isn't comprehensive proof that they necessarily are. But quite honestly, the amount of times I go into cafes and pubs and, you know, other places that I've been, and people go into a public toilet and they come straight out and they clearly haven't washed their hands. And it's prevalent. And it's disgusting, right? And I think that, you know, I think the gentleman that made the point about social responsibility, I think that's a really, really important one to stop the spread of diseases like this. It's a simple thing. Just wash your hands regularly when you're, using the toilet when you've been here, use the hand sanitizer. I think that was pretty good. And if the masks are proven to be effective, you know, fine. Maybe we should wear them if you're vulnerable.
Yes.
If you're on the London Tube and you're like a sardine all squashed together, probably it makes sense. But maybe if you're generally out and about, I'm not sure they're necessarily going to be the answer. But yeah, I would like to see a campaign for flu jabs and hand washing in addition to all the other information that's being given out.
Have you had this flu, lastly, Hayley? Do you know anyone who has?
I haven't had the flu. I've had a very awful similar something when I came back from Lanzarote last year. I'm not sure it was the flu, but I did wear a mask. I used to work in London. I now live in Martock, Somerset. But when I was in London during COVID, I wore my mask consistently and I still got the disease twice.
Look after yourself. Be well. Nikki in Kent says wearing a mask helps reduce the spread of flu and similar respiratory viruses by blocking many of the droplets released when people breathe, talk, cough or sneeze. James in Ealing, masks help is easy to prove mathematically, which is the purest of all the sciences. It's slightly more difficult to know the extent to which they help because it depends on so many things: type of mask, stage of infection, how well it is worn, etc. Alex in Blackheath, are you wearing one? Morning.
Hello. Hi, Nick. Yes, I would wear one, definitely. And I would wear one if I had a cold or a flu and I had to go out, because it is a killer. And I'm high risk. I've had 3 heart ops and I've got another one coming.
Oh, good Lord.
You've got such a young voice. No, I've had it. It's the congenital thing, so I'm used to it. But since COVID and having COVID, it goes straight to my chest and it's scary. It's not pleasant. I'm absolutely terrified of catching something, more so this time round. And I've just been in a chemist where somebody's coughing, no hand over mouth.
Oh.
So I leave the chemist. Yesterday in IKEA, someone sneezes into my back yesterday.
Oh.
It's like, God. I know. It's like, please wear a mask, because there are lots of people out there that are high risk that don't want to catch it. It's just being considerate, really.
You be well. Good luck with your heart condition. I hear that it's congenital. I hope it goes well for you, Alex. Thank you. Have a good day down in Blackheath, an area I know rather well. Ed's in Hounslow. You going to wear a mask, Ed?
Good morning, Nick. No, I shan't be wearing any masks. I won't be filling the pockets of these people who are making themselves very rich out of all these.
Well, never mind that. What about doing your social duty and not spreading flu if you happen to have it?
Well, right from the beginning, I've listened to the people that you should be listening to. I listened to, for example, Dr. Judy Mikovits, who was the director of the Fort Detrick Military Laboratory in America.
What did she say? I'm sorry, I'm not familiar.
She had a 40-year career in the laboratory. And she told us, Dr. Judy Mikovits, she told us quite categorically that you should not wear masks. It's utter nonsense.
But that's been disproven by so many other medical agencies and individuals, Ed. You're seeking to just hold on to, I would argue, a very small section of medical...
How many of them... Well, how many of them have themselves created biological weapons, which she did? How many of them have dealt with things like Ebola, which she did, throughout her career? All these things. How many of them have that experience that she had?
I don't know, but... And it's a fair point you make, but when you have virologists and others saying that it's probably a good idea to wear a mask, I don't see why anyone would disagree with it. Ed, we have to get to the news, thank you. But if we're talking about Ebola and we're talking about COVID and we're talking about grooming gangs, we are determined to lift the mood. Years ago this morning, the reviews were out for the first episode of Coronation Street and they were universally dire. So I'm asking, as the numbers have gone down from 21 million to around 4, are you in your 30s and watching Coronation Street? And man, you are. Amanda Cockham, my daughter is 32. She and I watch classic Coronation Street every single day. Sean, I've just turned 32. I love Coronation Street. I've been watching it since I was at school, back in the Fred Elliott days. I've never missed an episode since. I question all of that, but there's a lot of love for Corrie, and we'll come back to that. later in this hour. It's 9:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister has urged European leaders to redraw their interpretation of the ECHR. The UK is pushing for changes to the interpretation of the Human Rights Treaty to help tackle illegal migration. President Zelensky's indicated Ukraine could hold elections in the next 3 months. It follows Donald Trump's claim that Kiev is using the war as an excuse to put off a vote. The Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, has unveiled a 10-year plan designed to improve prospects for young people. It includes £500 million of investment to revive youth clubs and create so-called future hubs. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but still quite blustery with outbreaks of heavy rain in northern Scotland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won. When you cover the glassware, no one's actually allowed to use. Or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyd's today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Come back to wearing to mask or not to mask, that is the question. It could suffer a degree of trauma, still feels traumatised for the leader of His Majesty's opposition, but there's considerable trauma by many people of our next conversation. Now, you may recall yesterday we spoke of the horrific case of two teenage Afghan asylum seekers who raped a 15-year-old girl. They were living in taxpayer-funded accommodation. We wouldn't have known the full details of that story, but for a very brave judge who defied requests not to identify these two Afghans, who've now been given fairly hefty terms of around 10 years each. We cannot deport them at the end of that because we do not have a returns agreement with Afghanistan, as it is deemed an unsafe country. Well, that's prompted two newspapers, the Daily Mail and the Daily Express, to look into this in more detail. And the Mail has discovered the Home Office has no idea how many asylum seekers have gone missing since arriving in this country. So if you'll agree, I know some of you don't like the word problem, but if you'll agree that it is an issue that needs to be resolved, how can you possibly solve the issue if you don't know how many people are here? The National Audit Office verdict, says the paper, will raise more questions about Labour's handling of the crisis. And then inside, both the papers chart the high level of crimes that have been committed by illegal migrants. And these are severe crimes. They talk of the 15-year-old walking back from a nightclub, a student attacked in a churchyard, a 19-year-old waiting to be collected by her father, all raped or sexually assaulted in Britain by people who had come here illegally. In some instances, within days of arriving, someone from Ethiopia, within months of arriving, someone from Afghanistan. They list all the offenders, Hadesh Kabatu, Amin Abedi Mofred, Rapula Amadaz, Sadak Nikzad, Hassan Abu Khayla, and so it goes on, Ayman Adam, from Sudan, from Afghanistan, from Ethiopia, from Egypt, on and on and on. When is action going to be taken? I'm not ignoring the fact, as many of you like to say, oh, but what about other sexual crimes that are committed by British people? Yes, that is appalling as well. Of course it is. But they're not mutually exclusive. Why would we want to add to this? And why in some instances, now I know you can't with Afghanistan, but why aren't these people being instantly deported? But let's talk about this failure to even know the size of the problem. Charlie Rowley was special advisor to Theresa May as Prime Minister, and then Michael Gove as Secretary of State for Levelling Up, and joins me now. How surprised when you heard that headline either last night or this morning that we have no idea how many asylum seekers are on the run? How surprised or otherwise were you, Charlie? Morning.
Well, good morning, Nick. I'm sad to say I wasn't surprised at all, because, you know, we've known for a long time that the Home Office is not fit for purpose, and it's largely because of the subcontracting, the large amounts of subcontracting that it does, expecting other people to look after its work, whether it's security firms, whether it's third-party agencies, whether it's hotels that it has direct contracts with, and expect them to do the checking in of people that have come into either the country or people that are in their residence. They are the ones that are ultimately responsible, and if they don't feed back the information or we don't have tabs on people, I mean, it's a bit like me taking a car for a spin if I wanted a new car and not returning it back to the garage. You'd never know where I was. I could drive off with it in seconds. You know, with no tabs or checks at all. It is ridiculous that we don't have that kind of scrutiny or checks and balances on people. And just to your earlier point that you were saying, you're absolutely right. Look, you know, the majority of sexual offences that take place in the UK are predominantly by white men, British men, because we are predominantly a white British society of white men and women origin. But the proportion of crimes that are committed by people that come into the country through illegal means is so high comparative to the rest of the population. That is why it's such an issue, and that's why things like the grooming gang scandal, there's an inquiry, a national inquiry that needs to take place there, because it's particular people of particular origins that is disproportionate to the rest of society in terms of its ethnicity, but commits a higher proportion of crime. That's why it needs to be looked at in terms of the grooming gangs, and that's why it needs to be looked at in terms of the people that come into the country illegally.
Charlie, how confident are you that the Prime Minister and or the Home Secretary are aware of the size of the problem and are developing initiatives to try and combat it?
Well, I think that's a $1 million question. Lots of people will be listening to your programme this morning thinking that, you know, perhaps the government haven't got a grip on it. I think a lot of people, to be fair, to try and be as open as I possibly can, I think lots of people think that the Home Office hasn't had a grip on, you know, these kinds of issues for a very, very long time. But I think the more and more that we see or hear of people coming into the country illegally, the more that you see those small boat crossings taking place, and the more cases that you hear going through the courts of these particular crimes, particularly heinous crimes, the ones that you just talked about, I think the more and more people will lose faith in the government and the Home Office.
We'll never know, but might Rwanda have helped with this, Charlie?
I think it would have. And I personally think, look, you know, there are times where you just need to flex your muscles, show a bit of bravery. You know, if you're in government, it's about doing things. And, you know, if a lawyer comes into your office and says, "Oh, I don't think that's a very good idea," or "I don't think you win the case," well, you get a better lawyer. And I think Rishi Sunak should have probably said, "Look, we've spent so much money on the Rwanda scheme. Let's get these flights off the ground. Let's deal with the legal implications, if there were to be any, later on." Because there's always going to be somebody that comes into your office to stop you doing something. I think you've just got to go for it. You've got to do things in government. And had we seen those flights taken off to Rwanda, had that scheme actually been able to be a success because it would have been implemented, then I think we would have seen those small boat crossings heavily reduced. I think it would have been a deterrent, and then we might not have been able to experience some of the cases that, as I say, your listeners are waking up to today.
Lastly, we're 3 and a bit years or whatever away. How much is this going to be the dog that could bark at the next general election?
I think it's massive. I think, look, the Tories got an absolute kicking at the last election, and arguably rightly so, because they didn't deliver on the things that they said they were going to do, which is cut tax and stop the boats. This government have come in with a huge majority, which is why it's even more extraordinary that they're, you know, very unpopular. You know, they've got over 400 seats. Keir Starmer has a massive majority. It's a loveless landslide. But if he doesn't smash the gangs, as he said he was going to do, if that one-in-one-out scheme, which doesn't appear to be one-in-one-out, it seems to be slightly disproportionate, more into the UK compared to going to France, and France, however many millions we're paying them, failing to stop the boats coming across in the first place, I think that is going to bedock this government, and that is why people are looking to an alternative. That's why Reform is still doing as well as they are in the polls, despite some of the things that you're hearing about Reform and Nigel, and that's why I think you're absolutely right. This will be a number one issue at the next election in this year's time.
Charlie Rowley was special advisor to Prime Minister Theresa May, also worked with Michael Gove, Secretary of State for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities. Thank you for your input on that. The cases are horrific. The 25-year-old woman in a nightclub in Wakefield, West Yorkshire, who was pursued into a toilet by a Sudanese asylum seeker who then raped her and attempted to strangle her. Obviously, she survived. He'd come here illegally. The 12-year-old girl who was raped in Warwickshire, single count of rape by an Afghan national who'd come here illegally. And I haven't even mentioned the other case in Warwickshire, the two 17-year-old Afghan rapists who went after a 15-year-old girl, forcing her to perform sex acts in a park. So many of you say, oh, but there's so many other... Yes, it's appalling, but it is the proportion. And when will a government actually take action to protect everyone? How many more, in this instance, two of the three cases I've cited, are underage girls as well? So how many more underage girls are going to have to be raped, sexually assaulted, forced to perform sex acts in parks before some kind of action is taken? Ask yourself that question. We might return to that. But it's masks, and it's the idea that we should all be wearing them because of the fact that flu is spreading in the rate it is. John is in Coventry. Are you wearing one? John, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, of course, I want to protect my fellow resident of the UK, and it's my duty to keep my germs to myself. I think there's a lot of people that tend to sort of have very poor personal hygiene habits, and they don't understand that opening your mouth and coughing without putting your hand over it isn't very good for...
I think you're meant to put your sleeve over it now, aren't you, actually, as I recall from COVID days. Do you remember?
Yes, yeah. I mean, like your previous caller said, I mean, somebody coughed down the back and you go around some of the supermarkets and it's like a shotgun alley, isn't it? You know, you sort of don't know who's going to be doing what. But, I mean, the way to sell it is that if you draw a Venn diagram of the people that don't wear masks and conspiracy theorists, there's a big sort of central bit that occupies both circles. But what you want to do is you want to sell it to one by saying, if you wear a mask, facial recognition won't work on you. So that's the way to say.
I mean, I was speaking to Ed, who I've spoken to before, and I always value his opinions, but nothing is going to persuade him, you know, that he should be wearing a mask. It's extraordinary.
Well, it's like going back to school and learning the basics of washing your hands. And at a very young age, you're told basic things make results. So if you put a blanket ban on people not having masks, having masks, where you say, I've got it the wrong way around.
That's right.
If you say people have got to enforce mask wearing, it brings everybody to a certain baseline where you say, well, if I'm going to cough, I'm going to have to think about that because I've got a mask on. Because some people just don't have that built into them for some reason.
Lastly, when did you put yours on? How long ago?
All the time. I worked all the way through COVID.
You've never taken it off, effectively?
Oh, I'm not that ugly, Nick, you know what I mean? All the way through COVID, we worked on data centres down in Newport
did. Okay. John, be well. Thank you. Marcus in Sunbury. Marcus, have you been wearing a mask all the way through? Good morning.
I have. Good morning, Nick. Yes, I do wear a mask. One of the things I was going to say, there's a few things, actually. I think a lot of it comes down to common sense, which not everybody subscribes to. But I myself have underlying health conditions.
Yep.
I've got COPD myself. I was in a supermarket. Yeah, I've had operations on my lung and, you know, even wearing a mask, actually, it hinders my breathing anyway. But I was in a supermarket, going back to your last caller, what he said, and I see people coughing. They cough into their hands, and you're right what you're saying, you're meant to cough into your sleeve or at least the back of your hand.
That's
if you
right.
cough into the front of your hands, you may go and touch something, your hand
you
or anything.
You touch the tube or the bus or whatever it might
be.
And
someone's
picking
it up straight away.
I think
there was a quote yesterday or a few days ago about this, that I think the NHS might be inundated with up to 800,000 people because of flu. And I think wearing masks would, you know, at least take some of that off.
You be well with COPD. Thank you for that, Marcus. We've been talking about flu, we've been talking about Ebola, we've been talking about grooming gangs. Let's celebrate a great TV product. The reviews were in 65 years ago for this show.
You decide to have an affair to enliven the tedium of your marriage, and you have to go and pick a little creep like him.
I didn't pick him. I didn't go looking for an affair. I didn't want an affair.
Oh, I see. It was an irresistible impulse. Was it written in the stars?
Ken Barlow discovers Deirdre's affair with Mike Baldwin. That was 1983. Come on. Are you in your 30s? 20s? And you watch Corrie? I doubt it, but you'll tell me. 9:45 LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister's urged fellow European leaders to go further on changing the ECHR to help tackle illegal migration. President Zelensky's indicated Ukraine could hold elections within 90 days, and the Culture Secretary's told Nick that ministers are keeping a close eye on Australia's social media ban, but the UK has no plans to impose similar restrictions. LBC weather, brighter for most places, but staying blustery in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M4 westbound from Junction 7 at Slough West to 89 at Maidenhead. And that's following an accident. On the Euston Road, eastbound, right near to Euston train station, a car has broken down and that's causing queues. Also delays on Blackfriars Bridge. This is because the south side of the river, New Bridge Street, is closed from Ludgate Circus to Blackfriars Bridge for emergency repair works. So that's causing lengthy delays. On the train, severe delays on the Elizabeth line. The overnight works finished late. There's also a track problem as well. Also on the trains were delays for about 20 minutes for Southeastern at Charing Cross, and that was after a signal failure that happened earlier this morning.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
To mask or not to mask, that is apparently still the question. And how much harm does a strict school do?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Roll up, it's time for the raffle.
Oh, everything costs a fortune these days. Even my mobile bill.
Well, yeah, you're with a big mobile network. I'm with Lebara. Their prices haven't gone up since 2020 and they're rated 5 stars on Trustpilot.
5 stars? For customer service?
Yep. Real people on the phone every day from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
And the winning number is 10!
No, from £5 a month.
Lebara, the smarter mobile network.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
With Lloyd's Home Insurance, there's £50,000 to be won when you cover the glassware no one's actually allowed to use, or the garden shed, a.k.a. your fortress of calm. Rated excellent on Trustpilot, you can be confident with your cover when you take out a new home insurance policy and be in for a chance to win £50,000. Get a quote with Lloyds today. Buy a new home insurance policy direct from us by the 31st of December 2025. Offer T's and C's apply. Policy terms, limits and exclusions apply.
At Fidelity, we've been helping our customers plan for their retirement for nearly 20 years. From understanding how much you'll need to combining multiple pensions, we offer expert insights, excellent service, and even financial advice, so you can feel confidently invested in your future. For pensions, advice, or investment accounts, be invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Transferring is not right for everyone. Terms apply.
Do you have a co-op card or membership number? In July, Co-op's CEO confirmed that the personal data of all 6.5 million members was accessed in a major cyber attack. If you're a member, your information may have been exposed, and you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The statistics are pretty impressive now, but originally it was intended to have just 13 episodes. They're now over 11,700. They're nudging 12,000. But 65 years ago today, this very morning, the reviews were in and they were anything but positive. Former TV critic for the Daily Mirror, Ken Owen, someone I knew and I worked alongside Ken, and credit to him, he dined on the following review.
the programme is doomed from the outset, with its dreary signature tune and grim scene of a row of terraced houses and smoking chimneys. Young scriptwriter Tony Warren claims to have spent a couple of months going around meeting the ordinary people of the North before he wrote the first episodes. Frankly, I can't believe it. If he did, he certainly spent his time with the wrong folk. There's little reality in his new serial, which apparently we will have to suffer twice a week for just 13 episodes. Dear old Ken, sadly, I think we lost him about a year ago, actually. Tremendous journalist, great TV critic. As I say, he never, ever resigned from the fact that he got it totally wrong about Coronation Street. It is now, according to the Guinness World Records, the longest-running TV soap on the planet. In its heyday, it regularly attracted over 20 million viewers. Characters such as Bette Lynch and Ken Barlow and Mike Baldwin. The number one episode was 1985, 21.4 million viewers. Now, its annual average currently is 4 million, but the world has changed, the world of television, and the world generally has changed a lot since the 80s, so let's be fair there. And it airs Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays. But from next year, from January, the broadcast pattern is changing, a weekly soap power hour, with half-hour episodes each weekday. So, obviously, they, ITV, think there's a lot more in it. But are they? Are they right? Well, I want to hear from you if you're a younger viewer, because my sense is, and the only thing I never was able to agree with my dear late mum on, she used to watch it, and I just couldn't understand it. Scott Bryan is a TV critic and broadcaster. How do you rate it, Scott? Morning.
I mean, I sort of have a bit of sympathy towards him in terms of his reviews back then, because us critics, we do get it wrong sometimes.
Did you have no Ken, by the way? He was a top bloke. He really was.
Yeah,
he used to laugh about it.
Yeah, because I have read his stuff, but I sort of feel that, you know, it's kind of one of those things where you don't really know how much the show's going to resonate with the viewing public, and I think Coronation Street, you know, certainly has done so, and I think it was, you know, groundbreaking in so many different ways it portrayed life, but I think it also had that relatability that many viewers cherished for so many generations. I think a challenge it has with a lot of other TV at the moment is just our changing viewing habits, because the way that you would get into watching soaps traditionally is by family viewing. You know, essentially, if your parents were watching it or if a relative was, you would get into the habit of watching it alongside with them. And then lo and behold, maybe decades down the line, you would then pass it down if you have your own children. And I think a challenge is now is that the kids might be watching one show in one room whilst you're watching in another, but also you might not be watching TV together at that time at all. So I think getting into that habitual pattern is just that little bit harder. And I wouldn't say that like soaps are doomed or soaps are sort of necessarily passe. I think it's certainly happening at a rather troubling time. You only have to look at elsewhere to see that Neighbours, which was relaunched by Amazon, is coming to an end this week.
Oh, is
Hollyoaks,
it?
Yeah, really? It is, yeah.
So that, why do we, because that again, Scott, that was a powerhouse. Why do we sense that's not worked?
Well, I think part of it was just because, I mean, firstly, Channel 5 sort of changed their kind of audiences. You know, they're much more going for a sort of older audience who don't really tend to watch soaps, where Neighbours tends to be quite youth orientated. I think it's also the fact that it is a show which the UK was propping up at the other side of the world. I mean, it's incredibly popular with sort of cult audiences within the UK, but not necessarily the case as much in Australia. And I think Amazon were taking a bit of a gamble. There's never been a long-running soap really on a streaming service before, because the idea is you have a limited series, because if it doesn't work, if it doesn't reach an audience, you can axe it straight away and move on. Whilst soaps are actually quite cheap to make per episode, they can end up costing quite a lot of money, because you have to have quite a large cast, you have to have the permanent set, and you also have to commit to something like, you know, 100, 200, 300 episodes a year. So that can end up being quite an expensive contract. And I think Amazon just weren't thinking that it was, it wasn't reaching maybe their audience expectations.
Talk to me about this, lastly, about this power hour. I've got a note here that as of January, the broadcast pattern will change. It will move to a soap power hour with Emmerdale from 8 through 9 Monday to Friday, 8 until 9 Monday to Friday. They're gambling quite a bit there then, obviously, aren't they, Scott?
Yeah, they are, but I mean, I think it could potentially work for them, because a challenge that Coronation Street, I've sort of read and I've heard from diehard fans, is that actually at the moment it could be quite sluggish, because at the moment they tend to put the episodes in block hours, which means that essentially, you know, the idea is was that they were trying to lend themselves towards this binging format, when actually I think viewers want to have half an hour episodes. Now, that does mean that there's actually going to be fewer hours of both Corey and Emmerdale a week. You know, there's going to be, I think, a cut of about 30 minutes a week. Mm-hmm. But I think audiences really want more focus on maybe going back to basics, to the kind of the humour that the show kind of was very well known for.
It was and funny, I think, at times, I'm told, wasn't it? There was genuine humour in there, and the way it was written, the way the characters played the various roles.
Yeah, there's been quite a lot of sort of scepticism in sort of recent months and years in kind of its focus too much on crime. But I think also, like, at the end of the day, I mean, these soaps are so much a part of the British backbone. I don't think they're going to go. I just think that they are having to really be inventive to try to keep up with our changing audience habits, really.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Scott Bryan, TV critic and broadcaster, thanks for that. Are you young? Do you watch? Corrie, Chantelle is in Medway. Hello, Chantelle. What's your story? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. So I'm 38 and I've been watching Corrie for many years. I've probably started off watching it with my mum and my nan.
Right.
And I've just continued to watch it throughout the years. I don't tend to watch it live. I tend to watch it on ITVX. So I can watch it as and when I want to watch it. But yeah, I really enjoy it.
What's the appeal? Because you're a young person and you are in the South. You sound as if you were probably born and raised in the South, so you don't have the touchstone with Manchester. You won't be offended when I say its viewing demographic is considerably older than you in your 30s. So why does it work for you?
I think it's got some gripping storylines. Mm. And I think it's also really easy to watch. It's not like other series that you might watch on other sort of media streams,
right,
where you get so engrossed that you feel gripped to watch the next episode and then the next episode. I think it's quite, for me anyway, easy to watch a couple of episodes and then move on.
Right.
And I feel sort of, I get to know the characters as well.
Okay. Are you a soap fan? Do you watch EastEnders, Emmerdale, or any of the... what's the other one? The Farm? Emmerdale, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Emmerdale. I used to watch them all, but I tend to just watch Coronation Street and Emmerdale now, and sometimes, every now and then, I'll watch the others. Coronation Street and Emmerdale.
And lastly, when you mix with people your same age, perhaps you've got some girlfriends around the same age, or they've got boyfriends or partners or husbands, do a lot of them watch it? Or do they say, Chantelle, why are you watching that? Why aren't you watching Traitors or Love Island or, I don't know, I'm a Celebrity or whatever?
I don't think...
You're a bit of a standout here, are you?
I don't think too many of my friends watch it. A few do, but a lot of them have sort of, stopped watching it over the years. Although my younger sister, who's 33, she still watches it. I mean, not as much as I do. I think she just, like, sort of watches it while she's scrolling social media and things like that.
Favourite character? I've got to get to the news. Favourite character, lastly, Chantelle?
Oh, that's a really hard one, actually.
Yeah?
I don't know. I like them all.
You love them all and you love the show. Chantelle, thank you. Best wishes to your sister and to your mum and to your grandmother, if she's still with us. Many hours of happy viewing. Listening for now, for me, is finished. James O'Brien's the other side of the news. But if you missed any of the show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions and put your news catchers in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. As I said, James O'Brien will be the other side of the news here at LBC. Then we'll be back, of course, tomorrow morning doing it from 7. Meantime, do stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and if in my 53 years on this earth there has been a more powerful piece of drama in any format, whether it's on the stage, whether it's on the silver screen, or whether it is on the small screen, then the moment Jack Duckworth, I'm going to well up even thinking about this, the moment Jack Duckworth found Vera sleeping for forever, if you like, in the armchair, in the room where the ducks, the iconic ducks, are flying across the sitting room wall, then I haven't seen it yet. I just absolutely I can't think about anything else, which is a bit of an imperfect start to a program that's going to have to dive straight into the news agenda. We'll begin, I think, with the masks.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Keir Starmer has urged European leaders to curb human rights laws to help tackle illegal migration. Talks on reinterpreting the European Convention on Human Rights, or ECHR, are due to get underway in Strasbourg. The Prime Minister's warned changes are needed to halt the rise of far-right populists. A separate report says failures in Britain's asylum system are a result of short-term reactive policies. The public spending watchdog looked at 5,000 asylum cases lodged 3 years ago and found 56% remained unresolved. Ministers say they're implementing sweeping changes. Ruth Kelly is chief analyst at the National Audit Office. LBC has been told a former Metropolitan Police officer was accused of being part of a grooming gang, but the case was brushed under the carpet. Two women who grew up in care made allegations against the custody sergeant in 2012, but the case was dropped because of a lack of evidence. We can now reveal he was allowed to retire under investigation. The Met says it's reviewing the case and has encouraged anyone with information to come forward. The Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy, has told LBC that ministers are keeping a very close eye on Australia's social media ban. But Lisa Nandy's indicated the UK has no plans to impose similar restrictions. Under-16s in Australia have spent their first day without platforms, including TikTok and Instagram. Figures from Ofcom suggest British children aged 8 to 14 are spending nearly 3 hours online every day. The communication regulator has warned youngsters are spending significant periods of time on devices late into the night. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 6 points at 96.48. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather, brighter for most places, blustery with outbreaks of heavy rain in Scotland, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Hey Sainsbury's, have you got anything to help my money go further?
Well, if you want to make some big savings, make sure to use Nectar Prices and your Nectar Prices at Sainsbury's. Together they can save you over £450 a year on your food shop.
Bring it on.
Download the Nectar app and tap into great savings. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus Nectar app required. For full terms, see help.sainsburys.co.uk/help/nectar prices.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after ten. It was the Ogdens, wasn't it? It was Stan and Hilda who had the ducks flying across their wall, not the Duckworths. Too distracted by the plight of Vera passing away in her armchair before Jack Duckworth came to find her and just embarked upon a sort of lyrical or just poetical paean to his dead wife. If you're just tuning in, I should probably explain that Nick finished his show with a commemoration of the Coronation Street anniversary. And you'll find this quite hard to believe given my well-documented champagne socialism. But I used to watch that show religiously back in the day, right through to probably the early days of Steve McDonald's courtship with the character that Saran Jones played, and later as well, Sally Lindsay. I remember her heyday. Julie Hesmanhouse. Both of those ladies have been on Full Disclosure, and not by accident. It's no coincidence that the great actors who began on soaps and then went on to do magnificent things have a real soft spot in the hearts of people who enjoyed the programmes. But I could have done better, perhaps, than getting the flying ducks. I had some ducks once. Mrs. O'Brien got rid of them shortly after we got married. But I think they were Guinness toucans, actually. I had a Guinness toucans on the wall of my bachelor pad that were flying across in the style of the ducks on Stan and Hilda Ogden's sitting room wall. Where, of course, Eddie Yates was a lodger. But I could do this all day. I could reminisce about Coronation Street all day. But I am not going to. I'm not going to. Is it possible that the Duckworths kept the Ogden's ducks on their wall? I mean, I could have got that right. I mean, it's all messed up and messed up in my memory. I'm not going to issue any spoiler alerts for revealing that Vera Duckworth passed away in Coronation Street. Goodness knows how long ago it was, but you can count it in the decades, not the years. So, I mean, there's an interesting story today that's just caught my eye as I sat down, actually. Would I catch a bus? No, not out of choice, says Andy Collett. I feel much happier using my own car. This, for any people still inexplicably dreaming of a career in journalism, this is how you write an introduction. This is by the BBC's West of England correspondent, and somebody else. There's two names on the byline, Dan Johnson and Sophie Woodcock. But this is how you write, this is how you drop your lead. Would I catch a bus? No, not out of choice now, says Andy Collett. I feel much happier using my own car. What? What's that got to do with the price of tea? What's that got to do with the price of eggs? Second sentence. His sentiment isn't unusual among passengers, but Mr. Collett is a bus driver. That is a brilliant intro. You go, oh, crikey, tell me more, you think to yourself. Eleanor generally doesn't let me do phone-ins about buses. I think it's because she's a bit of a snob. I catch a bus every day. I catch at least two buses pretty much every day. Sometimes I catch more than that. Sometimes I catch a bus even though it's not the quickest way to get from A to B, because I quite like sitting on the top deck of a bus and watching parts of London go by. The most beautiful, magnificent city in the world, whatever Donald Trump may be lying about this week. But I love buses, and yet I do recognise some elements of the story published today, reporting 40,000 incidents of antisocial behaviour, an increase of 24% on the previous year. And this story comes from the West of England and looks at the West Midlands, but the figures are national. Here's one from Mr. Collett. I was attacked by about 30 school kids, he says. I had cuts, bruises. They bent the fingers back on my hand when I was trying to hold the door to stop them getting on the vehicle. But as I say, I'm the producer, who obviously her word is law, never allows me to do phone-ins about buses, which is a shame, because the last time we did a phone-in about buses, do you remember, we found the strangest bus in England. We found the bus that literally, I won't get it exactly right, but it literally ran on something like the third Thursday of every month in the months that had an R in them, or something like that. We found that bus. We had people listening to the programme. I don't know if they were listening all the time or whether they just rang around each other to alert the community to the fact that buses were on the agenda at LBC. I was in clover that day. I was like a pig in poo. I was so happy. But anyway, that's why I'm not allowed nice things. That's why I'm not allowed nice things. I was sitting on the tube this morning, not the bus. I was on the bus this morning, but this isn't when I saw someone wearing a mask. And it happened last night as well. So I was thinking to myself yesterday evening, I wonder if it's time for us to have a conversation about masks. Because you notice them popping up in the wild, don't you? And you find yourself, well, I don't know. This might be the first question I ask you this morning. What do you find yourself thinking and feeling? I don't know if you were listening to this program in the very, very early days of the pandemic, but I was slightly embarrassed by my reaction to masks. I was slightly embarrassed by my feelings, my reflexes, when it came to the face masks that we were, with increasing clamour, encouraged to wear during that period of history. And I couldn't understand why my reaction was childish, not childlike, sadly, big fan of childlike, but childish. I kind of had a touch of the, well, don't tell me what to do's. And I remember thinking also, as I walked around a relatively deserted West End, I always get my memories mixed up in my head of when we were coming into work here, despite the fact that most people weren't. And then, of course, we weren't coming in either. We were doing the show from the shed. I say we. It was just me. That was the strangest period of my career. I know everybody had weird experiences during COVID, but imagine getting out of bed in the morning, walking downstairs, having a cup of coffee, and then I presume someone was delivering the papers, were they? Was the news?